Do you remember a time when sleeping on the floor with your friends wouldn't have been considered weird? The management of this website invites you to a new dimension in podcasting, an experience so fun it can only be compared to a childhood sleepover. It's not just about horror.
Tom Atkins proves that any man is leading man material.
It's not just about action.
If you're going to rank Van Damme movies...
Yeah, it's up there.
I'd put it top five.
It's not just about comedy.
There's no other person in the world that loves Weekend at Bernie's more than you.
It's not just about thrillers.
It occurred to me that Cruising is like the most awkward sleepover movie ever.
It's not just about science fiction.
You put your chin to your chest and you're like, you're so nervous. We're all going to die.
It's about nostalgia. Can you survive the Saturday night movie sleepover? It's not a movie. It's a podcast about movies.
You can follow Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers at SaturdayNightMovieSleepovers.com on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and just about everywhere you can listen to podcasts.
Hey, everybody, and welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very excited for this week's show because it is our annual rundown of the summer that was.
So
summer.
We have to say goodbye.
2017.
For the summer.
We've been doing this show every summer since we began.
Remember
in 2010.
This.
A post. Did you hear about the Morgan's World?
Every day,
and as always, for this special summer show,
sealed with a kiss,
I am joined by JB.
Hello.
And Adam Risky.
I can almost see it. October.
It's, as of this recording, it's less than 30 days away.
Sweet.
So this is exciting. Someone, the weather was a little bit cooler the other day. I saw one leaf fall, and I was like, that's it. I'm in.
Mm-hmm. Someone posted on Twitter, you see one leaf
that
fall.
That was it. That was all it
and
took.
And then it was a JPEG of David O. Pumpkins.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to get my kids excited for Halloween after we saw the leaf fall. And I'm like, ooh, let's talk about Halloween, kids. And they immediately bypassed Halloween and went right to Christmas.
Oh,
and I,
that's disappointing.
I never disliked them more.
Are they just really pumped for Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle?
I assume
so. And that's why they wanted
so,
to be Christmas?
They're huge fans of Jack Black.
Yeah. He's playing a girl.
Oh, because of Goosebumps.
They're not really huge fans of Jack Black, but they do like Goosebumps. Anyway, so we're going to talk about the summer that was 2017. I'll lead it off right up front by saying I know the two of you saw twice as many movies as I did, so I'll do my best to keep up here. But if it's not Wonder Woman, I'm out.
That's
speaking
okay.
Of Wonder Woman, we're defining the summer as starting with Wonder Woman, right?
No. Summer starts with Guardians Volume 2.
Oh, a whole month earlier.
Yes.
Oh, that's okay. So we can include the stink fest that was Alien Covenant.
Sure, if you would like. It's bizarre.
And that's
Adam
our
and I,
show.
Adam and I were talking about this the other day because we're recording this show at the end of summer, and yet movies that came out at the start of summer are already on DVD and Blu-ray and iTunes, and that window is so short now. It's good for me because I was able to catch up and see King Arthur Legend of the Sword, which I wouldn't have been able to see otherwise. So I'm the winner.
Speaking of iTunes, I just saw...
As we often are.
I think they sent me a missive. Kino has cleaned up all the Lena Wertmuller films, and I don't know how much our listeners are familiar with Lena Wertmuller, but I went through a Lena Wertmuller period at one point in my life. Here's the deal. If you buy them on Blu-ray or DVD, they're pretty expensive because they just re-released seven of them in a new documentary about her. Go to iTunes this weekend.
Yeah.
I'm assuming the sale will continue once this is posted.
I hope so.
You get all eight movies, the seven movies, which includes Swept Away and Seven Beauties, and this documentary, which I haven't seen yet, $35.
Wow.
That seems like a good deal.
It sure does.
That's expensive for a Wentworth Miller box set.
What would be in there?
Prison Break.
Prison Break. What's the...
Oh, okay.
What's the Nicole Kidman and Anthony Hopkins...
The Human Stain.
The Human Stain, where Anthony Hopkins is clearly playing a black man.
Is he?
Did you know that? Have you ever seen The Human Stand?
You say it like, have you ever seen Jaws?
I saw
Spoiler for Human Stain.
Yeah, he's a.
I have a Human Stain throw blanket at home.
It's to clean up all your human stains.
Yeah.
It's got a big picture of Kidman on it.
I don't care what the white man say. Hopkins is a black man.
Is the Human Stain, is the entire soundtrack just, it's been a while.
Yes, of course it is.
Since I wiped my butt on my throw blanket. It's been a while.
Spoiler alert, the human stain turns out to be blood.
Oh. So let's go back to the beginning of the summer.
Things
got off to a good start. That was an entertaining movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Marvel has done it again. I can't wait to see what's in store for Avengers Infinite War.
They're going to underserve and overstuff the entire landscape of everything you love.
A comic book hero that you weren't expecting will show up.
Infinite War.
The whole Marvel gang will battle Thermos.
I liked Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Me too.
I also liked it. I thought that it was better than the first one.
I did not.
Well, this
nor
is
a, nor
this
nor
is
did
what
I.
we call an old-fashioned stalemate.
But I thought they were like pretty close together. I think honestly part of what made the difference for me was just the element of surprise. And you can even tell in terms of the release patterns, because Guardians 1 came out in August when they're like, we're not sure, so we're going to hedge our bets.
Yeah.
And Guardians was such a hit that Guardians 2 comes out and kicks off the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So it is the biggest deal right now. And it was very good and very entertaining.
I liked it because of all of the emotions. I liked how emotional it was. And it wasn't like Yondu was my favorite character from the first one, and then by the end of the second one, I was on Team Yondu hook, line, and sinker,
yeah.
And I thought it was just really kind of sweet and moving by the end of it, and I liked that it was more about characters and their relationships, and it felt like a bottle episode almost.
Sure, yeah.
If it were a series, then like a movie where they had to really kind of follow beat by beat of a plot.
Right.
It seemed like all the action was kind of dictated by the characters and their relationships. And yeah, it was probably my second favorite movie of the summer.
Oh my gosh, this is an exciting tease, because
yes.
I feel like at some point you're going to tell us what your first favorite movie was.
That's where you're wrong. We never find
For
out.
Real?
That's such a cheat.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Just turn it off right now.
Guys, a hot news item. Warner Archive is releasing King Arthur Legend of the Sword.
Why would that be on Warner Archive? That's the label for like all the stuff that...
The movies that you forgot.
Well, and
hence the joke.
It's so it's so much better when you explain the jokes.
I'm on a 7-second tape delay tonight.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're done with Guardians, but I want to talk about King Arthur: Legend of the Sword for 1 second.
Yeah. Did you watch that today?
No.
Okay.
If we were going to put a movie into a time capsule to talk about the bad side of where Hollywood summer blockbusters are now, because I didn't necessarily see a ton of stuff this summer that I completely fell in love with that I will be watching for the rest of my life, but I think there were enough big movies that were done well, and by that I mean 4 or 5, maybe more, to justify and be able to say, like, sure, this was a successful summer. But if we're going to talk about the bad side of things, I think King Arthur Legend of the Sword stands in for so much of what is wrong with current blockbuster filmmaking. I didn't see the new Transformers, so I'm not going to point to that as an example. I was fascinated by all of the ways that King Arthur found to be terrible.
And what are those ways?
almost any way you can think of.
It was a perfect storm of elements.
Terrible direction where we hand somebody a big studio movie that shouldn't have one, and it's Guy Ritchie.
That's what I thought.
Bad casting. Terribly handled action. It combines the worst of Guy Ritchie with the worst of Charlie Hunnam, with the worst of Game of Thrones, with the worst of Hollywood blockbuster filmmaking, with the worst of franchise filmmaking, with the worst of CG special effects. Everything about it is this version of the thing at its worst.
Hmm. I'm surprised that they didn't have like a line of toys and video games for this movie.
Because just the hubris of it all?
For sure. Yeah.
By the way, I was on board for the first 5 minutes.
I was going to say.
I was like, this is kind of weird.
I have two things positive to point out for that movie. I thought that, because the first 5 minutes was like oversized elephants like falling off of cliffs and things like that.
Which you just didn't expect to see when you sat down for King Arthur.
Exactly. And and like mages. Let's talk about mages. Do you want mages in your multiverse? I thought the score was pretty decent.
Okay.
But, I mean, sure, it's not like, oh, I'm going to rush out and get that audio CD of King Arthur. That's the voice of somebody who is going to rush out and get it.
It seems like a movie that, again, you could tell this from the trailers, but you just wonder, how did this get past so many people? And it just seems like the kind of thing where it was like, we've spent so much money on it at this point. We have to keep developing it and hoping for the best. Mm-hmm. But I'm amazed that now Guy Ritchie is going to make Aladdin. Why do they keep handing him big movies?
It's going to be great.
Man from U.N.C.L.E. is entertaining. I kind of like Man from U.N.C.L.E. Like, I'm not ready to say Guy Ritchie is the worst.
I like Man from U.N.C.L.E. better than King Arthur. I don't think it's great.
It's not great, but it was a pleasant surprise versus...
I was no fan of those Sherlock Holmes movies.
No.
I just thought...
And also, this does the same thing
where...
The first time we meet adult King Arthur, he's boxing. And I was like, oh, this is Guy Ritchie's thing. There's no historical figure he won't make box.
Yeah. I wrote a review for King Arthur.
Yes,
and
you did.
I remember, I only bring that up because I remember doing some research while I was writing it. So, meaning I
while
looked
at I the, was in the theater.
You're not lying.
I was watching the Clive Owen King Arthur on my phone.
I definitely think it is a better movie. It is a better movie. I don't often do this, but if I'm in a theater that's sparsely attended and there's a lot of real estate around me and I'm very bored, I might bring out my phone and look at it. And I was definitely looking at IMDb trivia of King Arthur while I was watching King Arthur. And I read...
Infinitely more interesting.
And I read that Charlie Hunnam won the role. I think it was over... I know Henry Cavill was one person and Jai Courtney was the other person.
Oh, jeez.
And also, I think it's funny because it's like...
And three loaves of wet white bread.
It's
also in the running.
Because like if this is like... how you pared down your casting list and these are your three choices. I don't know. Maybe don't make the movie.
Exactly.
But Charlie Hunnam won the role because he told Guy Ritchie that he would literally physically beat up the other two guys in order to win the part because he is King Arthur.
He thinks he's his character from Sons of Anarchy. I feel like whatever. I would have rather seen either of those other two actors.
He's only good in Undeclared and Green Street Hooligans.
The idea of him beating up the two other guys immediately suggested boxing to Ritchie. And he's like, you have the part. Yeah. Now, is Charlie Hunnam an actor I'm not familiar with?
He's the lead in Pacific Rim.
But is he also the lead in Lost City of Zed?
Guide you. Yes, he is.
Yeah.
But I hear he's good in that.
I read two lists. Have you seen it?
No, but it's obviously a lie.
Okay.
I don't need to see any more James Gray movies. I got that guy pegged.
I read two lists online of like critics who were saying if I had to come up with a 10 best list at this point in the year, and both of those lists contain Lost City of Zed. It's really, really good. I've been saying this on the podcast since I saw it. It's really, really good.
I don't mean to make this personal against James Gray, but I read something where he was talking about how as an independent filmmaker, you would think that he's got a lot of money and he'd be really rich and famous.
Right.
But he's a true artiste and he only lives in an apartment in L.A., to which I say, if you're a better director, you probably would have a house.
Should have gone in for that King Arthur gig.
Yeah. Two lovers. I'm good. That's it.
Guy Ritchie's living it up.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got that. He definitely has a boxing bag somewhere.
Yeah. That's where he gets all his ideas.
Mm-hmm. He's just like, I'm convinced that he just invites over Jude Law, and Jude Law is just looking at his book collection, but it's really just like empty volumes that he pulls to go through like a revolving door to his dungeon gym.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Where he keeps all of Madonna's money.
Yeah. And it's just a bunch of like Warren Beatty and Sean Penn posters, and they're like there smoking cigars, and like they're like, "Welcome, guy."
It's very British.
Mm-hmm. They call themselves the Madonners. Can we keep just let's just keep talking about King Arthur?
Let's do it. Keep it rolling.
Same weekend. We already talked about it, so I definitely want to get JB's take on Snatched. The Goldie Hawn, Amy Schumer.
Did you see it?
No.
No, you're
no.
fine.
Okay. It is not good. So, no. Moving on.
Yeah.
I liked Lowriders that came out the same weekend as King Arthur and Snatched. And the thing I liked about Lowriders, and I figured it out on my way over here, is that Blumhouse, I think this was a Blumhouse tilt. So, like, they did Lowriders and Slight and Birth of the Dragon, which we'll get to. And they are basically like New Line now. So they've got a lot of horror stuff.
Yeah.
And they've got a lot of just kind of your exploitation, grindhousey, mall movie type stuff. And Lowriders was cool because it was like a spiritual cousin of the first Fast and Furious. It felt like it was made in 2001. And it was all about car culture in Los Angeles. And it was very specific. It was obviously like somebody wrote it because they grew up in this culture, and it was neat. It was just kind of like a take that you don't really see in a movie, and I liked, especially after Fate of the Furious, where it was so over the top with, you know, it's like almost not even about cars anymore.
I forgot that movie came out this year.
Yeah, it's really not good. I was way too kind on our podcast, meaning kind at all. And Lowriders is just like this neat, it's all about, you know, like, instead of seeing, like, a car hit a submarine, like, I'm more impressed by seeing a car bounce really high with its hydraulics and, like, the murals that are painted on the hoods and everything. So, it's not a great movie, but it just is something it's in my wheelhouse. I'm very affectionate for that kind of low-budget movie.
Not to go back to the Fate of the Furious, but I heard a story that whole ice sequence at the end was like kind of finished before they even started shooting, or possibly even finished writing, that it was all done by like previs, and so they were kind of locked into that whole sequence at the end. How is this the way to make movies? What are we doing?
I learned a lot about previs from the How Is This Movie podcast. Did you listen to that one where it was like an interview with Dana and Phil Joano?
No, Joano, not yet.
Sorry,
not yet.
Yeah. It's really good, but it talks about like the business of film in Hollywood in 2017.
Yeah.
And he really went into the previs thing, and he was saying that like one of the reasons why they've got so many independent directors and everything like that is basically like the entire set of action sequences are already pre-visualized.
Right.
So you just need to make sure that you're executing the shot list, and that's it.
Like, right.
You don't have to have any type of creativity. So he said to Dana, he's like, you could step in and direct one of these movies. So it's really depressing.
But Dana's a pretty good director, so.
Yeah, I don't know.
I liked his work on Kong Skull Island.
I mean, I didn't think The Human Stain was really that good.
Do you want to talk about Alien Covenant for real?
We did a podcast on it.
Yeah, I just didn't know if you wanted. I have seen a number of writers say that like 10 years from now, people are going to realize that that movie is a masterpiece.
And people are drunk.
Why do we have to wait 10 years?
I can't. I don't know why
what
that's.
What will happen in
well, the Well, they see that it's a masterpiece now. It's just that the rest of us have to catch up.
Is this predicated on the fact that movies are going to get shittier and shittier and shittier? So 10 years from now, oh, that Alien Covenant, it's a classic. It's so good. It's so great.
I had a similar reaction to Alien Covenant that I did to Jason Bourne last year, which was, it finally is down to the level that I always said these movies were, and people are finally recognizing it. Because I make jokes. Alien is far superior to Alien Covenant. Aliens is a great movie. I think the other five movies are very much okay to bad. And
I would agree with that assessment.
And in the Bourne series, I do not for the life of me get Bourne Supremacy and Bourne Ultimatum's overwhelming acclaim, especially compared to the first one, which I think is by far the best of the Bourne series.
I agree with you there, too.
And then with Jason Bourne was the one where, like, everybody kind of figured out. I'm like, this is what I've been seeing the whole time.
Right,
like,
right.
What took you so long?
But again, it's like product.
Yeah.
Captain Crunch is popular.
Yeah.
So now we'll have Crunch Berries. And then they had a thing where
all berries.
Right. And then it's... give the public what
Captain
they want.
Crunch's employees were getting fucking beheaded that week.
You know what you did, employees.
Oops,
and someone
someone
accidentally printed up these boxes.
It's like, it's not like it's oops, wood chips.
Oops, meth.
Those flew off the shelves.
Oops, voter ID cards. No, the thing also with Alien Covenant is, if you think of it in the grand scheme of things, okay, so discounting Alien versus Predator and Requiem and all that. So this was the sixth Alien movie?
Yeah.
Okay, if you go by, like, the sequel standards of, like, say, the 80s, and you're talking about Police Academy 6,
right.
You're just kind of like, hey, for Alien 6, it's probably better than I expected.
That's one of the few things that's... I actually like that argument.
Yeah.
For Police Academy 6, Alien Covenant is...
Your argument would be predicated on the fact that Police Academy 6, Mission to Moscow, brought back Hugh Wilson as the director.
We discussed this over email. I don't know what predicated means. It's a word you made up.
If it was some shitty – if it was Guy Ritchie's Alien Covenant, I'm with you 100%. But the fact that it's Ridley Scott coming back to do this thing – and I'm not saying Ridley Scott is
– he's so hit or miss though. Like, what do you
– I agree. But what I don't understand is, why am I not allowed to call this a miss? I don't mean to you. You're saying I am allowed. But when people are telling me this is a masterpiece, I'm like, no, Ridley Scott makes shitty movies. This is one of them.
Yeah. I wish some of these people would just get like – the word auteur like tattooed on their lower back already, because it's like, just because it's like an important director, you can still say that he made a not great movie.
Right.
It's okay.
Right.
It's okay.
Right.
You're not always missing something.
So then I went to see Wonder Woman.
Yes.
You skipped over Memorial Day weekend.
Ooh, what was Memorial Day weekend?
Pirates, Dead Men Tell No Tales, and Baywatch.
Okay. So
I want to ask you about Baywatch, because
Pirates is a big movie that we saw that I forgot.
Well, no, there's a flaw in my – I keep a record. I'm holding it.
Yeah.
I'm missing all these movies.
We all skipped over Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Long Haul.
I thought you saw it.
I did. Yeah. I'm saying we skipped right over it, because I saw that before Memorial Day weekend.
Who's better in that movie, Silverstone or Everett Scott? It's the only thing I need to know.
I would say Everett Scott.
Okay.
And it's not Alicia Silverstone's fault. I think she's saddled with the worst material, because she has to be like a nag.
Yeah.
And he gets to be fun dad.
Yeah. Who's better as a nag? Silverstone in Diary of the Wimpy Kid, Long Haul.
Yeah.
Or Ta Leone in Spanglish.
Oof. Ta Leone in Spanglish is a hard character to sympathize for.
Sympathize with
to feel sympathy for
okay, I'm sorry.
They make her kind of awful.
Yeah, but everyone's gonna nut when they do that Kino Blu-ray of Spanglish with the Leone commentary, and they're like, oh, I was wrong the whole time.
There's a lot of stuff in Spanglish that I like.
Paz Vega,
a lot of her stuff.
Adam Sandler. was okay in that.
Yeah. I mean, all their scenes together, like near the end when they're just sitting on the couch talking, I think all that stuff's good.
Yeah. I don't know. It's got, that's like part of the White and Brentwood box set.
100%.
Have you seen the trailer for Home Again?
No.
The entire
way too many times.
The entire, it's the daughter of like Shuler or Myers. It's like they have, it's like a generational thing.
Okay.
So the kids who grew up in the fancy house with the crate and barrel pots are now making movies. And I'm so excited for this because this is the first movie that looks like every single shot should just have tons of price tags on it.
I might be wrong, but I think it's Nancy Myers. I think she wrote it and her daughter directed it.
Okay. All right.
Yikes.
I'm guessing it's very much the same point of view.
So we saw Pirates. Yeah. I forgot it.
Yeah.
I forgot it
too. A big expensive movie that I don't remember.
I forgot it too. For the most part, the two things I remember from that movie was I thought the first half was really boring, and then the second half paid off some plots from previous movies with characters that I liked, so I enjoyed it a little bit more.
I think Pirates might be a really good example of what you were talking about before, that there's three big sequences that scream previs.
Yeah.
That this was conceived as a showstopper. When they're dragging the...
Dragging the house.
That's a good sequence.
The zombie sharks are an amazing visual effect.
And that whole thing at the end where he's trying to...
Kind of a disaster.
And they're like underwater. Yeah. In a water shit cloud.
He's gamboling about the ship and he's trying to get to something or move to somewhere. I don't know.
And the dragon in the house is a really good sequence.
And then also...
That's it.
I like Pirates movies a little bit just because I like to see beautiful blue water in the summer, especially when it's in Dolby Cinema.
Well, and that was my comment when the first one came out, that not only was it sort of a throwback to the way movies used to be and look and sound in the 50s and 60s, but it was another one of those movies where going to see it, it was like going on a vacation.
Right, yeah. And then...
I like the first three again. I do not like the fourth one at all. I liked the fifth one a little bit more than the fourth one, but not enough to have remembered seeing it.
I'm close to you on that one.
Yeah.
Like, I liked one and two a lot. Three, not as much, but yeah, this one's probably no better than or worse than three.
So. Right, right.
And then Baywatch, I've wanted to talk to you about this for a while.
You didn't see Baywatch, right?
No.
I saw it, and I thought it was bad, but I didn't think that it was, like, world-ending bad, so I wanted to get your take on why you thought it was extremely bad.
It's going in the time capsule with King Arthur, Legend of the Sword.
Was it as offensively crude as I've heard?
No.
Oh.
The crudity is not an issue. I mean, the few attempts it makes to be crude are just bad. They're not offensive. It's a character lays down on, like, a...
beach chair
with the slats in it, and then he gets a boner and his dick gets stuck in the slats and he can't get it out until his boner goes down, which ignores both how beach chairs are made and human physiology. But whatever, what a hilarious boner joke.
And then they put a grapefruit on it.
I thought it was a movie that was. Oh, yeah.
I'm on a 7-second take.
That's okay. He just saw Girls Trip today, so it is fresh on his mind.
It is.
I thought Baywatch is a movie that is bad in ways that should be studied. I think it is a movie that fails in every way that it attempts to exist. I think it's a movie that doesn't know how to make a choice. I think it's a movie that doesn't understand if it's parodying the thing or if it's just trying to sincerely be a feature-length episode of Baywatch. And at times it tries to do both. Again, spoilers for the last 5 minutes of Baywatch coming up, everyone. Okay, so this is not a plot spoiler, but...
I'm just impressed you remember it.
Because this one moment, to me, demonstrates so much of what's wrong with the movie. In addition to just being poorly written, not funny, 2 hours long, which is inexcusable.
Yeah.
Some of the worst CG fire I've ever seen. I mean, it's cheap to an embarrassing degree, the movie.
I thought the same thing.
Pamela Anderson's name comes up in the opening credits. So you know, okay, at some point, that Baywatch royalty, Pamela Anderson, is going to show up. The whole movie goes by. She hasn't shown up. So you kind of know what's coming. So they're standing around at the end of the movie and they say, okay, here comes our new boss.
Oh, boy.
Slow motion, Pamela Anderson walking into frame. Doesn't speak, there she is. Movie ends. So I'm like, so what's the joke here? That she's the new boss? That it's a surprise cameo from Pamela Anderson? Because you told us in the opening credits she was in this movie. They don't know how to execute one decision correctly. Not one.
So the joke is that Pamela Anderson only gave them an hour.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Zac Efron's character doesn't make sense. The Rock's character doesn't make sense. Just because, again, you can't decide. At times you think that the joke is that The Rock takes this way too seriously, and it's funny because he thinks he's beach police, mm-hmm. and ha-ha. But then most of the movie is like, no. If they don't do this, people will die. And so I'm like, wait, so is it funny that he takes this seriously? Or are we supposed to be like, yeah, you should take this seriously. Lives are on the line.
I mentioned this to you guys, I think, already, but is it Rob Hubel or Rob Hubble?
Hubel.
Okay. I don't think that Rob Hubel is bad, but anytime he shows up in a movie, I'm like, oh, this movie is going to be terrible. And yeah, he was in Baywatch, and he was also in another movie I will bring up later.
The moment
I saw it, my heart sank.
I've never seen the TV show.
Nor have I.
I'm wondering if the TV show...
I've seen the TV show. I can speak to this.
That... Was it lighthearted, or were there any episodes of the TV show where people could die if they didn't?
No, they could die. The show was...
Beyond pulling them out of the water if they're drowning.
It kind of got more campy as it went along, but I remember, especially in the first season, it was like watching ER, almost. Like, they took it, like, seriously. Like, this is life as a lifeguard on, you know...
And isn't the joke that, like, the disconnect is how seriously they're taking it and how ridiculous it is. Isn't that supposed to be the disconnect? Isn't that why people began to enjoy it ironically? And why was that?
I think they enjoyed it ironically because I think a lot of it just had to do with how pretty the girls were and that Hasselhoff is kind of a Shatner-type figure where he's just sort of...
He also shows up for a cameo with no jokes.
In like a phone store.
Right. No jokes.
Yeah.
So I have two questions.
Sure.
Did either of you see Chips?
Yes.
And when did that come out?
March.
Yeah, that came out before. Okay. Chips is a better movie than Baywatch.
Chips could have come out this weekend and I would have seen it.
Chips is a better movie than Baywatch.
Because I've seen Chips.
Yep.
I haven't seen Baywatch. Chips is a better movie than Baywatch.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chips, to its credit,
Book of Chips effect.
Does some, it's not a funny movie, but it does do some like cool practical motorcycle stuff.
Okay.
That's one thing I can say about it that I can't say about Baywatch. Because even the fire in Baywatch is fake.
I feel bad that I'm guessing the Blu-ray of Chips is already out.
Yes.
So that it can't feature cool practical motorcycle stuff. Patrick Bromley.
Sorry about that, but I can just tape it on your copy if you want.
My non-existent copy. My copy's still at the store.
Not that every movie is this
keeping
summer.
All its friends company.
I like it. Not that every movie this summer is going to go back to the Fate of the Furious, but the fake fire in Baywatch reminded me of the fake fire in the Fate of the Furious at the beginning. And I remember seeing that in that 4DX theater, and it was like that chili smell, that chili powder smell.
Gross.
So when I saw Baywatch and I saw the fake fire, I'm like, oh, that's a chili moment.
Where is the 4DX theater?
Gurney.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Baywatch, so, just to close the book on Baywatch.
Yeah.
It is still the worst movie I've seen this year.
No.
Yep.
There's one I'm going to talk about very soon.
It's probably one that I didn't see, but it's the worst movie.
No, you saw it.
Then there's no way it's worse than Baywatch.
All right.
This is making me glad I didn't see Baywatch. So then I saw Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I enjoyed.
Yeah.
But I think because the lead actress is stunningly beautiful. Like that's not a human being. Wow.
Actually, she is. I'm just kidding.
Is she? Well, I thought she was CGI.
No.
And
she has feelings and everything.
I thought it did a lot of things right. And I think I may have pointed this out on the podcast before, so I'll keep this short, that the talking point was that it seems like DC, whose films I'm not really a fan of, had taken a page from the Marvel book because Wonder Woman seems a little bit more like a Marvel movie than a DC movie. Not that I would know.
In that it's kind of good.
Mm-hmm. In that they sort of use the architecture so that no matter what else you like in the film or don't like in the film, it's going to end with some sort of standoff between two characters where they fight in a shitstorm, a literal shitstorm where black, I don't even know what it is. It's DC effluvium flies through the air. And I started to think, like the storms in Pacific Rim, is this being done because you can hide shitty special effects if you have black?
Are you talking about because it was like at night they were covering for bad effects?
It's just overly busy with the CG.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. There's a lot of stuff I like about Wonder Woman, and Gal Gadot gives one of my favorite performances of the year, honestly. And I think even though I think it has problems, I think it gets the spirit of the thing so right that I'm willing to overlook all the problems. But it has many of the same issues as most comic book movies.
And I always go back to Iron Man, which I think was sort of the beginning of this whole thing, and that it's like a 6-year-old playing with action figures, that the movie has to end with the two things fighting each other and punching each other across the room or the airstrip or the Steam and Sparks factory, no matter where the ending of the movie.
I liked Wonder Woman as well. I definitely think it's the best DCEU movie so far.
Without question.
I feel silly because my immediate takeaway, because obviously this is the biggest movie of the summer. It was the most talked about movie of the summer. It was the one where it took on a life of its own, where the conversation wasn't even about the movie anymore, which, you know, whatever, it's fine. I'm going to get in trouble no matter what I say, so I just won't say anything. The thing that I thought was the funniest about my reaction to Wonder Woman, I told Rob this when I visited him a couple weeks ago, was my immediate takeaway was, wow, I really like Chris Pine. Like,
just missing.
Yeah. Like, it's like the first superhero led icon.
How about that guy?
And I felt terrible, but just testament of how much I think Chris Pine is just such a valuable resource to these blockbusters. He's awesome. He's my favorite.
You're right about Chris Pine, Adam, because you know all lives matter.
Stop it.
We did it again, though, you guys. We talked right over Captain Underpants because I saw Captain Underpants.
How is it?
I was bored out of my fucking mind.
Welcome to Parenthood. I remember taking Jake to a succession of movies. The two I remember best. Not the first Mortal Kombat movie. The first Mortal Kombat movie I actually kind of like.
Paul W.S. Anderson.
But the
It's awful.
It's not awful.
How about this? Because he used to play the video game its original bad graphic, chunky, early video game, I was expecting less than nothing, and I got something.
I can sit through it, which is like more than I could say for Captain Underpants. I tried to go to sleep during Captain Underpants.
I'm talking about the sequels. I'm talking about the succession of
Pokemon
movies, where we were just going to get the card because you got the only place you get the card. Yeah. And then I think it's Shazam.
Kazam.
Shaq.
Kazam.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I see why you would say Shazam, though, because his name is Shaq, and he plays Kazam.
To be fair, that movie had a lot of script issues.
Yes.
Can we rock? What's up, Doc?
One critic at the time said,
green egg and ham it.
One critic at the time said, the movie revolves around a bootleg audio tape.
Yeah.
What child gives a shit about a bootleg audio tape?
Well, that's
and
like in the
Paul Michael Glazer,
how it's about embezzlement.
Right.
Paul Michael Glazer directed it, and there's a scene where the bad guys chase the kids on bicycles where everyone's always going in a different direction, so it doesn't even make – like a beginning film student would look at this as an editing exercise where you have to have them all going in the same direction or have footage of them turning – so it's you're watching this chase and you're like, well, eventually they're going to run into each other, right? Because the bad guys are running right to left and it's a mess. But you're doing your job as a father by going to these films with your children.
Yes, but I just so you know, I do draw the line because Captain Underpants was based on a series of books that he had read, but like I would not take them to the Emoji Movie, lest anyone think that I will take them to see any animated film. I will not.
The first
Did they
wish
want to see
in,
it?
Yes.
The first wish in Kazam, he's testing him. He I says, know, I want candy to fall from the sky. And it does. And he picks up a candy bar, takes one bite, throws it down, and leaves it. And apparently, they just leave all this candy, and it's going to smell, and it's going to be something that people will have to pick up later.
I remember the first wish.
Yeah.
I want candy. Any kind will do. That's my insane shout-out to Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Is The Mummy next?
Yeah.
Now, you saw it, right?
Yeah, didn't
and
you?
And did you?
Yes.
I didn't know that you went to the theater and saw it?
I sure did. Yeah. We did an episode of Corpse Club on it, so I had to see it.
A very entertaining episode of Corpse Club.
I'm really glad that Heather was able to derive entertainment out
Me
of
too.
It. Because I briefly talked to her at Flashback about this.
Yeah. She's very defensive about her enjoyment of that movie.
I see, and I can't even say anything really like... I feel guilty saying anything bad about it because of Heather's reaction because
right.
there's so many movies that are coming up on my list that I should not have liked.
Well, again,
that I did like.
It goes back not to bring up Independence Day Resurgence. Yeah. I can't argue with fun. If it's like, I had fun. How do you argue with that? You can't. You can't tell someone, no, you didn't.
But this is what I can't understand because I'm the original Universal Monster guy.
Right.
And this is a movie from Universal with a mummy in it.
It's the launch of the Dark Universe. Mm-hmm. It also has Dr. Henry Jekyll. It is a giant piece of shit.
Thank you. You pointed out Baywatch. I think The Mummy is the worst movie I've seen this year.
You saw it.
I agree.
When last we spoke, you hadn't seen it. Did you see it? The Mummy? Oh, you did go see The Mummy?
Yes.
I thought you said you
didn't.
The
weekend it came out.
Okay. Oh, I thought you said you didn't.
No. Okay. I was there.
Got it.
He's been in country. Don't
doubt
him.
No, listen.
I was there and primed to enjoy myself.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah, it was embarrassing.
It's not good.
I was staring at like the steps leading out of the theater during parts of The Mummy. Like, it was crazy.
I was jealous of the person who got to leave because they had explosive diarrhea. I wish I had diarrhea.
The Mummy was so bad that it made me think that I was being way too hard on Van Helsing.
No, Van Helsing is awful.
But will you agree Van Helsing is better than The Mummy?
No.
What?
It's awful in a different way.
Yeah. I can't agree with that.
It's spoiled oranges versus spoiled apples.
I do like spoiled oranges.
I really don't like both of them.
The weekend that The Mummy opened and flopped, the next week people were falling all over themselves. And the most entertaining thing I read was someone, I don't know, an unnamed studio source, threw Tom Cruise under the bus and said he had taken a particular interest in guiding the story and turning this thing into the masterpiece that it's in. Because the germ of it, that the Cruise character is awful.
Yeah.
So we sort of have the anti-Brendan Fraser in the original reboot, who we kind of like. I thought you could have done something with that because he's really awful at the beginning.
Yeah, but the movie won't admit that.
Yeah.
No.
So he's supposed to be lovably roguish, but he's awful.
Again, and I may have told
And he's awful
story
through the whole movie, by the way. He's never less awful.
Podcast. There are actors who can get away with lovable rogue, and Tom Cruise is no longer one of them because now it's douchebag. There's a musical. It's called Carousel. It's almost impossible to do right. Because a character, spoiler alert, dies because he's such a jackass. And then he comes back and he's supposed to be the lovable rogue. And they did it at your high school, young man.
Yeah.
With this loudish, brute kid playing the lead who was incapable of playing anything except Lenny in Of Mice and Men. And you sat through this 2.5 hours of this just... jerk, just
right.
the biggest jerk,
right.
And I know I'm
finally a musical about a date rapist.
Well, that's almost what it was
right.
like. It
right.
was like, and I felt that way about The Mummy, meaning I felt like I was being date raped while I was watching the film because I have such affection for the original Universal character.
The Mummy was frustrating to me the most because it wouldn't commit to any one thing.
Nope,
it was
right.
trying to be everything and succeeding at none of it.
And as another, should also go in the time capsule, because all of that stuff about where this, what's the name of the company?
Dark Universe?
No. Henry Jekyll's secret shadow organization.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter.
Oh my God, but just the name of it like gives me such douche chills, and this whole thing about how like we're going to be the thing that threads all these movies together. It's so cynical. And the Jekyll stuff, the CGI Mr. Hyde.
You can't wear makeup?
Inexcusable.
Like, really? All right, two more things with
I'm
going
to look it up.
Two more things with the mummy. First thing is I was very distracted that Tom Cruise was basically looking like he just came out of like a nightclub the entire movie. Like he's just wearing like a button down shirt and jeans. He looks like me when I was 28 and going to John Barleycorn on Saturday night. And then the second thing, I know a way for Universal to save Dark Universe.
Stop it.
I know two ways for Universal to save Dark Universe. You take the Flossy Posse from Girls Trip.
I'm into it.
And make them Abbott and Costello.
Okay.
And you mix them with all the characters in Dark Universe.
By the way, I 100% would see a movie where, like, Tiffany Haddish comes face to face with Frankenstein's monster. She's like, and just wants to fight him or fuck him. I don't care which.
I want
to
see her grapefruit Dr. Jekyll.
By the way, The Mummy made over $400 million. So it's not the disaster we want it to be. God. And the company... The shadow organization is called Prodigium, and like some screenwriter jerked himself off when he thought of that. Like, we'll have this company. What do we call it? Prodigium.
Wasn't most of that money overseas, though?
Yes.
It was not a success.
I don't even think it made $100 million
It was
here.
Not a success.
Yeah, it
in
made
the
like
States.
80.
Yeah.
It was.
Which is a disaster for a movie that cost about $200 million.
Same weekend, It Comes at Night.
Oh, hey, I remember that movie.
Yeah.
Happy Father's Day, JP.
I'm going to let you guys have the floor because I said everything perfectly on the Batman and Robin's podcast that I will ever say about It Comes at Night. It was like God was speaking through me. So I don't want to say anymore.
I actually saw It Comes at Night with Patrick.
Yeah.
That was Father's Day weekend?
It was Father's Day.
Oh, wow.
Kind of a bad movie to see on Father's Day.
Movie sucks.
I really hated it, but find it difficult to explain why.
Because
for the first half hour, I was intrigued.
Yeah.
And then I thought it was a case of diminishing returns, that clearly the screenwriters are setting something up. And when we find out what it is, I just felt it was underwhelming.
But would you agree that it's a well-made version of a disappointing movie?
Oh, yeah.
So can you hate a movie that's well-made?
Yes.
Really?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Based on how it makes you feel.
Later in the podcast, I want to specifically talk about
Movies that are incompetent. I don't hate movies that, like, that's not for me. I didn't like the way I felt. I felt disappointed by the ending, but, like, they know what they're doing.
Later in the podcast, I want to talk about a well-made, disappointing movie to sort of see what you guys think about it, because it was later in the summer.
Okay.
But I'm not.
It Comes at Night, too, and it's not the movie's fault.
Whoa.
More...
They made it and It Comes at Night 2?
Yeah.
T-O-O?
Yeah.
It's about another thing that doesn't come at night?
Yeah. The sequel is called It Comes Again on Another Night.
It Comes at Night 2, parentheses, we promise.
It Comes at Night, colon, daytime soaps. This is definitely not a horror is in a bad place thing.
No.
Because Get Out was just this year, and there's all other examples of horror movies this
year.
Wish
Upon came out this year.
We'll get to Wish Upon for sure. So there's two trends in horror that are happening. One I'll mention later when we talk about Annabelle Creation, but one trend in horror is the boutique horror.
Sure.
Which is like, we have to handle the Blu-rays with white gloves, and that's what it comes
literally.
In. And that's what it
we're
comes.
We're just going to put white people on the front of the Blu-ray.
Oh my God!
Oh wait,
yeah,
no one liked
weird.
That. We better change this. Hold on, we're sorry.
And like the A24-ification of horror, like in certain areas where, no, this is classy. This isn't horror. These are post-apocalyptic thrillers, and this is post-horror and stuff like that. It's such nonsense. And part of the thing that I think, and I don't want to speak for all of horror fans, but me as a horror fan that I like, is that these things are rude. They're kind of disreputable in a way. That's part of what the fun of horror is. It's not always supposed to be so like fancy pants.
That at its heart, it should be transgressive.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that there's not enough kind of B-grade horror right now. There's way too much, like, either you've got no budget and you do what you can and you're homaging Carpenter, or there's, you know, this is for the festivals and the critics will give this 80% tomato meters and stuff, and there's not a lot of in-betweens.
I'm a little frustrated, though, guys, because I feel like we went right past Cars 3, which...
Oh, we'll get to that.
Okay, good. Okay.
And then one real quick one, because it was that June 9th weekend. Beatriz at Dinner. Did you guys see that?
It's been on iTunes, and I want to rent it, but I have not yet.
It's not bad. I think that it's just saying stuff that I hear all the time now,
sure,
and
yeah.
I don't want to hear it in a movie. And then I think that it's so gallows in certain ways that it's just kind of like you just watch it and you're like, okay, well, if you guys were both a little bit more kind of middle ground about things, then like you could have avoided certain things, and then you just leave the theater shrugging your shoulders.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like two sides that are dug in and won't listen to each other, and then you just end the night where nobody's satisfied.
I wanted to see it more until... Yeah. The Hitman's Bodyguard put me off Salma Hayek for a little bit.
Yeah, she's...
Not that she's
that
like... She's, it's not her fault.
Yeah, it's what they have her doing in that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a very specific type in that movie. Cars 3.
Cars 3, by the way. That's it. I just wanted to mention Cars 3. It's my son's favorite movie of the year. He still talks about it.
I'm happy for that.
It is not the worst, you know? Mm. You think it's the worst?
Well, it's not the worst movie of the summer. I think of the Pixar movies, I would say this is like down with Brave being near the bottom.
Maybe.
I just
don't bother ranking the Pixar movies anymore. So
don't laugh at my rankings.
Pixar and Marvel, every time there's a new one, let's rank them all. Like, let's not. We just did this.
Yeah.
I don't care where this one falls.
Just did this 6 months ago.
I didn't see Cars 2.
I don't even think it's worse than Finding Dory.
I think it's worse than Finding
Dory.
That's
fine.
You're doing it.
Cars, I thought, was okay.
You're ranking them by bringing
it. Oh, yeah, you're right.
Whatever. No, Cars, I thought the first Cars was cute in like the whole Route 66 nostalgia thing.
Yeah.
I thought Cars 3 just was very... I don't know, like flavorless. It was like a rice cake of a movie.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think it, like a lot of the Pixar sequels, repeats what previous movies have already done thematically, almost beat for beat.
Yeah.
I like where it lands because of some things. And also, I think there's that sequence in the middle of the film when they're in like a demolition derby that I think is really well directed.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a few things that stand out. It's not a movie I'm going to think about. And if my son wasn't still talking about it, I wouldn't have thought about it at all.
I was kind of bummed that they backtracked a little bit on... I thought the teaser trailer for Cars 3 was really exciting.
Really?
Because
I didn't, because I'm like, why am I going to bring my kid to this movie that's all about Lightning McQueen dying?
So they show...
And it's like, you haven't seen anything yet. Yeah. Everything changes from this
moment. Thank you. So they show Lightning McQueen flipping through the air, obviously after a collision at high speed. And then it says, this summer, everything will change. And I was like, this is going to be like the second act of Born on the 4th of July. We're like,
but see, as a parent, I'm like, I don't want everything to change. Just fucking make it.
They're not anthropomorphic cars anymore. They're enormous insects.
This isn't your parents, Lightning McQueen.
I just want Lightning McQueen to like drive back to Radiator Springs, and he's just like, women and children. Wow. Women and children.
That's a pretty good Owen Wilson. Wow.
Yeah. Cars 3 was one of those movies where I walked out halfway through and then stood there and said, yeah, I should probably go back in there. So I missed about 5 minutes.
I wouldn't have seen it if I don't have kids. I'm not defending Cars 3. I refuse to die on this hill.
That was a busy weekend, because also that weekend was 47 Meters Down. Did you see that?
I did not.
No.
Okay.
It's still playing in some theaters.
And it's on iTunes.
Yeah.
47 Meters Down. Not saying it's better, but I thought I liked it more than The Shallows. And the thing I liked about 47 Meters Down was the people who made it obviously were big fans of The Descent. And I will not spoil anymore, but it was it surprised me in a lot of ways, and I thought that it was consistently tense. And the and Mandy Moore, whether you'd say she's like a good actress or a bad actress, she's a very sympathetic actress, so it's easy to be on her side during this whole thing.
It's still at two theaters
around
here, and I have nothing but joy for Mandy Moore, because a long time ago I wrote a column about romance and cigarettes.
Yes.
And we tweeted about it, and Bobby Cannavale and Mandy Moore responded to the tweet.
Very
they're
nice.
Both that's in cool. that movie.
Very nice.
And then
Mandy Moore was like, we had fun making that.
She seems like she has fun doing everything.
Yeah, right?
She's like, I had the funnest oil change today. and by that, I mean somebody changed Mandy Moore's oil.
Which is pure fun.
But there's a thing where Matthew Modine is in 47 Meters Down, but most of
naturally.
It he's just speaking through a like a walkie that they basically have like built into the scuba suit. So he's talking to Claire Holt and Mandy Moore. And the whole time I kept thinking of Gary Sinise on Mission Space. I kept thinking he was just going to be like, navigator, push the red button, engineer. So same weekend, Rough Night. Now that I've seen Girls Trip, I can say that Girls Trip is better than Rough Night.
Rough Night is not great.
Wow.
It's definitely not great. Although, I know you are not a fan of Kate McKinnon. I'm a fan of Kate McKinnon in theory, but I think Kate McKinnon is now being used in the same way that so many comedic actors are, which is just like, come in and riff and just do your thing. Like Making Her Australian had no point. But like when she says like somebody asks her like, what do you do? And she says, singer-songwriter is the dream, birthday clown is the reality. I thought that was a very funny line.
The thing with Kate
Party
McKinnon.
Clown, sorry.
The thing with Kate McKinnon, and I think she's funny on SNL. It's just in movies she rubs me the wrong way. And I think part of the problem, and it's not her, it's just that she needs a part where she's playing a real person. Like, I don't believe she can play a real person, because I've never seen her play a real person. Like, she needs a Kristen Wiig in Bridesmaids where she's playing an actual character and not a caricature.
Well, I think that started with the Ghostbusters reboot, where clearly she was just...
It was a mugging fest.
Yeah.
But at least she... Well, whatever. We don't have to get... I thought at least she was doing something in that movie.
You had your chance last summer to talk about that. Also that weekend was All Eyes on Me, which I rushed out to see because it was the Tupac story you haven't heard. And, I'm a big fan of Tupac Shakur's music for the most part. And I think that he's a very interesting, if not always likable, figure. And I will say that this is the Tupac movie that I never would have expected. Because I kept thinking, like, when I walked in, I'm just like, oh, they're really just going to try to do Straight Outta Compton.
Right.
But no, this is like the Man of a Thousand Faces of Tupac movies. Like, this feels like Somebody Up There Likes Me. Like, it was a 1950s biopic version of Tupac Shakur, and it is fascinating. And the lead actor, Demetrius Shipp Jr., who plays Tupac, is very, very good. And he's, whether it's an impersonation or a performance, like you forget that it's an actor and you think that it's him. And it's wall to wall of the music. They got the rights, obviously, to all the music. And just because of that, as a fan, I was very entertained by it. So knowing that it's not a super high quality movie, it's still like one of those guilty pleasure 3-star movies for me.
I just remembered something, and I want to go back, and I apologize to going back to Rough Night.
Yes.
But we talked about Snatched on the Fugitive podcast, right?
Yeah.
And I talked about how, like, in the middle of the movie, Goldie Hawn and Amy Schumer have this very honest conversation about mother-daughter relationships. Mm-hmm. Rough Night does that, too, about three-quarters of the way through Rough Night. Not a great movie.
Is it between
Scarlett Johansson and what's her name?
Jillian Bell?
Yes.
Okay.
Have a very honest conversation about what happens to people when you've been friends for a long time and maybe you grow apart. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated that the movie included that. I don't think it's a great movie. I don't think it's a very funny movie, but I appreciated that exchange.
The movie just kind of immediately bummed me out once it started to become about like jewels.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, there's so much dumb shit in it. But I appreciated that scene.
And also weird for like a female-led comedy where they give a lot of the funny stuff to the men. Did you think that?
The guy, the fiance.
Yeah,
he had funny stuff.
I thought they had funnier stuff than the
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Which was weird. My only walkout of the summer was the next movie, Transformers: The Last Night. Yeah. It is what you think it is.
Right.
I don't know why I even tried.
I didn't see it.
Yeah.
Fool me four times. Five times? I don't even know.
It's, yeah.
This was number five, right? And hopefully the last.
I've only seen one Transformers movie. Just one.
I will say before I went to, I think it was The Big Sick. I was like going to see it late at night and I had a few minutes before the movie started and I didn't want to sit by myself in an empty theater. So I went and watched a few more minutes of Transformers. I'm like, well, maybe in the second half it's a little bit better. And I walked in at a part that I was stunned that like nobody laughed at this, except I noticed it, where it's Josh Duhamel and Mark Wahlberg. They're running on this surface that's like metallic. So I'm guessing it's part of like a crashed Autobot or whatever.
Sure.
And they show Mark Wahlberg running, or his stunt double running.
Whoa.
And
this is slippery, bro.
Dude, he's running with helicopter arms. And it's like a long, it's like a wide shot. But
check out
like,
my arm.
He's like running like this, yeah. And I think it was really funny.
This is how I stay upright.
I saved Boston and Patriots Day, right. Bro. It was just me. Appreciate all the hard work.
I skipped it.
Okay, the next weekend, The Beguiled. Did you guys see that?
I never did, and it's one of my big regrets for the summer. I have a few.
I'm a big Sophia fan, but this was pretty much her worst movie, I think.
Oh, okay.
It's very pretty.
You're a fan of The Bling Ring, though, right?
Yeah, okay. I think this is probably about on par with The Bling Ring.
Okay.
It's just got no point of view. It's just a very flat retelling of the. Yeah, I mean, it's all costume designed and well acted, and it follows a story with not much attitude, where at the end, where it's, you know, it plays out its finale, you're just like, okay, well, you executed that beat and now the movie's over.
Okay.
And that's it.
Are you a fan of the original?
Yeah, I like the original more because it's crazy.
It is crazy.
And
yeah.
This one is just very polite and genteel.
Yeah, see, I was interested in seeing it from a female filmmaker's perspective.
But you almost get
but you
nothing.
Don't get that. Okay.
You almost get nothing from that. I mean,
that's
like the performances are good. Like I noticed this time, because sometimes I think like Nicole Kidman, like sometimes I see her in a movie and I get the folks who say that she's one of the best actresses that are working today. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm just like, I don't really see it. Like I feel like she's just kind of distant almost. But this time I kind of noticed that she does a lot of stuff facially, that she's like doing a lot without words,
right,
and doing a lot through body language. And that was the thing that I noticed. So the whole time that I said, maybe not so much Nicole Kidman, I was wrong.
Hey, everybody. Patrick here. Remember last year when we had Blake Fischera on the show to talk about his book Scored to Death? Or how about earlier this year when Blake was on to talk about Silver Bullet? Well, as you probably already know, Blake is the co-host of his very own podcast, Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers. We've been talking about Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers on F This Movie for a couple of years now. You probably heard the spot at the beginning of the show. They're great guys, Blake and Dion. They're friends of ours. They do a great show that a lot of F This Movie listeners have checked out and fallen in love with, and it has become part of their regular rotation. They're actually celebrating their third anniversary this September, and they're going to do yet another giant-sized anniversary episode. Maybe you remember their previous anniversary shows, Batman 1989. Last year, they did The Rocketeer. Who knows what it's going to be this year, but I'm super excited to find out. They've been killing it this year. They've been doing a ton of shows from 1987 to, of course, celebrate 30 years of that amazing year in genre films, with shows on The Lost Boys and RoboCop, Adventures in Babysitting, Over the Top, Predator, you name it. In addition to that, they've done episodes on No Holds Barred and The Terminator and the original Black Christmas and Wayne's World and The Blob Blob and Remo Williams. I was even on the show once to talk about Teen Wolf, and we had a great time mostly talking about Boof, There's some fan favorite episodes, including Transformers the movie, the old cool animated one, G.I. Joe the movie, the cool animated one, not these new live action ones. There have been bonus episodes with special guests like John Carpenter's son, Cody, James Hancock from the Great Wrong Reel podcast, myself, and even Richard Christie from the Howard Stern Show.
Hey, I like sleepovers.
Coming up this October, they're actually doubling their output. They're going to be doing shows on horror movies every week. I can't wait to hear what they're going to be covering. Their shows are always a really fun mix of trivia about the films, honest discussion about the films, looking back sort of nostalgically at what it was like to watch these movies with a bucket of pizza. They capture that great sleepover feel. It's about friendship. It's about fun. It's about film. It's about an hour long. Anyway, you should absolutely check them out. They do a great show, and they are great guys. Check them out at SaturdayNightMovieSleepovers.com. They're on Twitter at SatSleepovers. You could find them in iTunes, everywhere you find podcasts. Blake is even doing another podcast now, 21 Pod Street, with Mike Vanderbilt from Daily Grindhouse. It is the only podcast devoted entirely to 21 Jump Street, so you know I'm going to be listening to that. Please check them out. Say if this movie sent you. Saturday Night, MovieSleepovers.com. It's a sleepover for your ears.
Next, I have... Well, I think what I have is wrong. The Big Sick, I think, would be next, right? I didn't see it until weeks later.
It's next on my list.
Okay.
And I really, really liked it. But at the time, I thought I was responding to the fact that in terms of comedy, over the last couple of years, we've set the bar really low. But since I've seen it, it rises in my estimation, because the more I think about it, the more I think it does a lot of things well. I don't even have a problem with the whole Ray Romano subplot, which some people seem to be having a problem with. Like, why is that in the film?
It seemed like it was in the film because it was a thing that happened. But maybe I'm wrong about that.
Like that happened.
I don't know that to be true, but it just seemed like, hey, we incorporated this biographical detail because this happened.
Yeah, at least like her parents were there with him the whole time, with Kumail Nanjiani the whole time. So, yeah, I don't know. I thought they were good.
I thought it was very clever. I thought it was really funny. Oftentimes when you have a movie that involves stand-up comedians, the stand-up isn't like real stand-up, but here I felt
okay,
it was.
Right. Yeah. But this was like his real stand-up act.
Right, which you had pointed out, the whole thing about the drug cheese.
But it was nice that the rest of the movie wasn't just him shoehorning pieces of his bit into the movie, which we've seen sometimes in stand-up movies.
And I thought Holly Hunter Fairling was really good.
Good and so tiny.
Playing a really specific character who changes.
Yeah.
Because that's another thing that we don't see in comedies anymore, except we were talking about this in the car before.
Yeah.
The shitty, shit-fest, gross comedy with all the transgressive stuff where suddenly at the end we learn something.
It becomes sweet and everybody has to get together and
but I thought
not
the
be
end,
mad at each other.
I thought the end of Big Sick was sweet in a... in an earned way, and I don't mean just because the narrative leads us there. The more I think back to The Big Sick, the better I thought it was.
Yeah, I liked it a lot the first time I saw it, and then I've only seen it once, and then I don't know why I said
but then when I was listening to you talk about it,
I
felt like I saw it again.
No, I saw it through your eyes, and it was beautiful.
And also, there were no colors. Are you colorblind?
No, I had to review it with Rob, and I was definitely in a really grumpy mood when I wrote it, when I wrote that review, and I really was nitpicking some silly stuff.
Because the reserve seating came out.
Yeah.
Everyone go back on the website.
Yeah.
You can look it up on another tab while you're listening to this. And then Rob was moved later in the week to post something else as an addendum to the original column.
The funny thing was Rob, like, I think retweeted that Emily Gordon had wrote something nice about the thing that he wrote for The Big Sick, and I did not know he wrote something else about The Big Sick, and I'm just like, oh no, she read our thing. Because if there was anybody I didn't want it to read that part, because I'm criticizing her life, basically. So more than once a year, but definitely at least once a year, I get a review completely wrong in a lot of ways. And The Big Sick was mine this year. I was way too hard on it. I enjoyed it always, but I was in a mood. It was my, like, don't think twice moment.
And by enjoy it always, you mean the first time and then the second time that never happened.
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean.
Which means he's looking forward to seeing it again, and I want that on the DVD case. Yeah. Looking forward to seeing it again, yeah. Adam Risky, F this movie.
I think I liked it more as a movie about relationships than as a comedy, even though I thought it was funny.
Yeah,
That's what I remember. And I will say, you had brought up the ending, and I won't spoil what the ending was or is, unless they change it. I don't know if that's another instance where it's one of these movies where you almost feel like you can't criticize certain aspects because it's like, well, if that's what happened, I guess who am I to say that it shouldn't have happened that way?
Yeah.
If the ending isn't what happened in real life, I'm annoyed at the movie cuteness of it.
Yeah.
But if it's what happened in real life, then fuck me. What can I say about it?
I'm hoping it did. And another part of the movie that no one talks about is the subplot of Kumail trying to break away from his parents'
sure.
concept of what he's supposed to be, which I liked because Master of None this season covered a lot of the same ground.
Right.
And that's a subject that I'm interested in.
Yep.
In that,
and
even,
it is not often portrayed in movies.
No, it's not. And I think a lot of us, I can't speak for the two of you, that your parents think one thing of you. And then the older you get, the more you have to sort of show them what you really are.
And it's a movie that is about a Muslim family and about that faith that doesn't smack of tokenism.
No. Yeah. They feel like in some ways they follow Muslim tradition. In some ways they're trying to follow more American traditions and everything, just like any family would that's lived in the United States for a long time from another country and everything like that. There's a lot of like interesting touches in it. And I think it's of like just pure comedies, it was probably my favorite of the comedies.
I can't name another comedy that was good this summer, right?
And lately that's one of the highest compliments you can give a comedy, given the relative crop of comedy, that it was actually about something.
Right.
Yeah.
Other than peeing on a crowd,
this is in
New Orleans.
I'll bet if we went back and listened,
they peed so much.
Like there was a sound effect and everything.
Yeah. It was like a fire hose.
If we went back to 2010, the first year that we did this, I feel like every summer we would say, "Hey, why was comedy so bad this summer?" And maybe somebody just decided comedy doesn't play in the summer. But certainly comedies come out and they're almost always bad in the summer.
Yeah.
So I can't think of anything that even comes close to touching this one. But maybe I'm not thinking of a movie.
I just remember when comedy was a bigger genre and there were comedies that were actually about something, but now I'm going back to things like Dr. Strangelove, which looking back might have been an anomaly that you're holding up the one, you're holding up the diamond and you're in a coal mine.
But even like This Is the End came out in a summer, right?
Yeah.
That's a great comedy.
Yep.
Just do that again.
Yeah.
Less sausage parties.
I was such a fan of that.
Mm-hmm.
Is Baby Driver next?
Yes.
Is that your favorite movie of the summer?
That's my favorite movie of the year
so
far.
Of the year?
Yeah.
J-Bones, is it your favorite movie of the summer?
Not at all.
Mine either. What's wrong with us?
And we saw it together.
We did, but not together together. We sat in different parts of the theater.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was an accidental date.
In the same theater.
We were both trying to explain it to our wives. Oh, it was a complete coincidence, really. It's nothing.
Was it a reserve seating gaffe? Like you just couldn't get seats next to each
other? It was at the iPick, and they were in the fancy seats, and we were not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did we know you were?
I think so, but I think you guys were like, we want the fucking fancy seats.
And I don't know why.
I demand comfort.
I wouldn't say it left me cold.
Was it a weird upstairs-downstairs thing when you met in the lobby afterwards?
I was asking him to dust, and he said, I don't dust, nor do windows. That I thought it was very good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But not what people were screaming about.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, it's one of those movies where I love it and I can recognize that it's not as kind of close to perfect as his other movies are.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I would say if I was kind of even ranking, like, Edgar Wright movies, here comes ranking again, Patrick.
Can you rank this against the Pixar movies.
Yeah. Better than Brave.
Baby Driver is better than Cars 3.
Yeah. No,
that's going to be on the DVD.
I definitely think all of the Cornetto movies are better than Baby Driver, but Baby Driver, I'm a sucker for just movies with like wall-to-wall soundtracks.
Sure,
and
yeah.
I think that the couple are real cute together, and they've got a lot of they've got fun chemistry, and I thought that Jamie Foxx was – it was like a really good Jamie Foxx performance.
Yeah, for sure.
And he's scary in it and stuff, and the – action's exciting, so it gave me like really just a lot of fun that I and it's the movie that I've it's like one of the that and Guardians were the only movies that I went back to by choice during the summer.
The direction of the car chase stuff is just amazing.
Yeah
it's super good. Well directed.
Yeah, I don't know, I mean like I like it more the second, like The Big Sick, I like it more the second and third time that I've seen it. So,
but you actually saw Baby Driver more than once.
Yes.
And I do want to see it again because I think some of his other movies have improved on repeat viewings. And unfortunately, Edgar Wright is in that rarefied air where every time I go to see one of his movies, I expect such a masterpiece that if it falls short in any way, I'm like, I feel let down. And so maybe watching it again.
Yeah.
Even the first time I saw Django Unchained, I was like, well, that wasn't as good as I wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. And now I love Django Unchained.
That the bar is set so high. My reaction to Baby Driver was similar to...
Not enough babies.
I wanted to see a baby. I wanted to see a boss baby driving a car.
By the way.
Now you'd have something.
Like, I recognize that it came out in March.
In two springs, so you will get that movie.
But we did go right past Boss Baby, and I did see Boss Baby. I'm kidding. It did come out in March. I did see Boss Baby.
Wow.
No.
I have children. I like taking them to the movies.
This summer, the...
and then complaining about it. On
only on podcasts.
This summer, the...
they don't listen.
It still counts.
This summer, the Twin Peaks reboot has been playing.
Yeah.
And, I think Jan and I were in L.A. and we missed an episode, and it was the episode.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that one. And, oh, the social media was abuzz with, oh, this was the greatest thing ever. And then I got home and watched it on the DVR, and it's the black and white episode.
Yeah.
It's the episode that is the least interest, rather, in narrative. It's the Eraserhead episode. It's
an hour
of Eraserhead tricks.
Right.
And I've had it with Eraserhead tricks because I love Eraserhead. You know how much I love Eraserhead. But as that series limps to its conclusion, I'm more interested in the narrative getting sewn up.
Yes.
And I think that was my reaction to Baby Driver, specifically the reaction to how everyone else reacted to Baby Driver.
Yeah. I thought that when I was talking to Rob about that, I thought it was funny because he was obviously like he's an Edgar Wright super fan like all of us are. And he was having a lot of the same problems that you were. And he was very disappointed that he didn't love the movie at the beginning. And I kept just picturing him as John Hamm at the end of the movie, like at that diner with his hair all disheveled. And he's just like this beautiful man at the counter who just like looks so miserable.
Who's the character in Baby Driver that reads the John Hamm character and just lays out his whole life?
Is it Jamie Foxx? Yeah.
That's a great scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially because... it depends on Hamm's reaction. I really like John Hamm in Baby Driver.
Mm-hmm.
The success of that scene is based on Hamm's reaction because Hamm's reaction is, oh, yeah, that's...
he's got me pegged.
Right,
that's
right.
Exactly what happened. I love that scene. And there's no driving in that scene.
Yeah. There's a lot of good scenes.
And no babies.
Because that's also the whole scene in the diner, right?
Yeah.
Where baby doesn't want them to realize where they are and who works there.
Exactly.
That's a good scene because it's tense and then you've got that exchange going on. Look, more than one thing happening in a scene. How nice.
Yeah.
No one gets peed on.
No, it's not as good, but it reminded me a lot of the basement bar in Inglourious Basterds.
Sure, yeah.
It's just all this tension's just being strung out by attitude and dialogue.
That's a great comparison.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I brought it up. Yeah.
Did we gloss over Dunkirk?
No, we're not there yet, I don't think.
We can talk about that next, though.
Not on my list.
You know what?
I have Spider-Man next.
I may have seen these in the wrong order.
Yeah.
And this is just me because I'm old and I'm losing my mind. I used to keep the ticket stub until I added it to the list.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I do it online and it's on my phone and they scan the phone, there's no paper ticket.
Yeah.
I can't believe the movies I'm missing.
Which ones are you
missing? Which I saw. I saw Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah. Oh.
Not on the
not
list.
Not there.
Sons of bitches.
Do we want to talk about Spider-Man or are we good?
I could talk about it.
I liked it. I thought it was fun.
I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I went back a second time to see it because I felt like I owed it to the movie because enough people like it, and I like most Spider-Man movies.
Yeah.
So it reminds me a lot of me senior year of high school, where it's like I thought I was so funny and I thought I was so great. And it nails that high school thing perfectly. Yeah. And I think, and when I said, like, I think The Big Sick is the best comedy of the summer, I think Spider-Man Homecoming might be the funniest movie of the summer for me. Like,
interesting.
I think it really works as a comedy.
Okay.
But I think it's a garbage action movie, if that makes sense. And my feelings for the first two Raimi Spider-Mans are so affectionate that I... the way I describe it basically is like if you go to a restaurant and you get the same entree all the time, and then somebody says, well, you should really try the chef's special, and you try it and it's not bad, but you just want the other thing. That's Spider-Man Homecoming for me. So I think it perfectly does what it wants to do, but it just, I can never love it because I love the other one.
I think it's less interested in being an action film. I think it was, from my memory of comic books, it was very comic booky to me, the way it was structured. I like that it was a lot less serious than these other things, although notice it still ends with a fight between the two.
But at least it's just, hey, you're trying to steal stuff and not there's a blue beam shooting into the sky.
Right. Yeah. One of the things I liked best about it was Michael Keaton.
He's real good.
And I don't think I'm spoiling anything that...
Oh, wait. You might be spoiling something.
That Michael Keaton's character is this working class guy who gets the shaft.
Right. Okay. That's
and
not spoiling anything.
It's sort of economic reality that turns him. So it was like, oh, nice nod to social reality.
It's another one of these movies that kind of like Wonder Woman. I think it gets by on energy and the spirit of the thing, because if we were actually to sit down and talk about does it work as a story, like not really in terms of the way that it's plotted out. Most of the Iron Man stuff I can do without. Some of the action beats don't totally make sense. So I recognize that as like a cohesive story from beginning to end, it's not the best movie of the summer. But again, I was having such a good time watching it that I'm able to overlook a lot of that stuff.
And I was giving it points for not walking us through the origin.
Well, of
for
course,
the third time in 12 years.
And maybe the best last line of the summer?
I was just going to say that. Just so great.
Yeah.
Although, not to play devil's advocate, but a question for you.
Yes.
I had a problem kind of really caring about Peter in this movie because there's no backstory. And not saying that I need the full origin thing, but I think that you're removing a lot of emotional weight and identification as an audience member, because we've only seen him kind of being happy gee whiz, whether it's in Civil War or in Homecoming. So it's like to your point when you were talking about the economic things with Michael Keaton, it's like I really sympathize with him, but this seems like a bratty kid who's just getting in the way. And if it wasn't for the weapons, then I would be on Michael Keaton's side.
And if they had just at least a nod to Uncle Ben, then the Spider-Man character would be more rooted in reality, just like the Michael Keaton character is rooted in a sort of economic reality.
Yeah. I don't know.
But don't you sit down knowing that stuff, and don't you carry any of that in with you?
I don't want to give something credit that's just because, like, it didn't earn it in any way in the MCU. So, like, why am I just giving it a pass?
It would have been better to do Uncle Ben again, you think?
Or just have him be alive or something. Okay. And, like,
if he was alive, then he wouldn't be Spider-Man.
So change it. See, I mean, like, why do you have to have it be stock and it's not the Bible. It's
Because I can walk in knowing who Spider-Man is and why he's Spider-Man. At this point, it was the first Spider-Man ever, I don't disagree.
You guys got time for a short tangent?
Yeah,
always.
It's not really a tangent. It's exactly what we're talking about.
Okay.
I think it's safe to say everyone knows the Spider-Man story. Here's what I want to compare it to.
Yeah.
I was at Target this morning, and they have all this new Star Wars merchandise out because they're getting ready for the December release, and the toys are out, and courtesy of David Fowley, who tweeted a thing about the toys, and they have Campbell's soup that has R2-D2 on the can. They have a cooperative crossover with Campbell's soup. And I made a joke to my wife that it's very hard to see when you look at the can what the flavor is. What is the soup that's in there? And I made a joke that it was wampa soup. And my wife said, no, you wouldn't want to eat a wampa. And the guy going past us on the cart overheard us and said, he means womp rat, the thing that Luke shoots from his thing. And I thought, so the entire world knows the Star Wars universe to the extent that when I get a creature wrong, this stranger.
But you weren't wrong, because the wampa is the big snowman in Empire Strikes Back.
But you wouldn't make soup out of it, which was my wife's point. You wouldn't want to eat a wampa, but a womp rat, which sounds like a smaller creature that could be made into
soup. So the guy
soup.
Was just trying to fix the joke?
So the guy.
Yeah.
Okay. He didn't actually think that you got the name wrong.
I got the name wrong. When a stranger
sounds
knows
like
this,
okay,
I mean,
that's
pretty
yeah.
esoteric reference.
Sure.
It's like, we're all down yeah. for Mom. You don't have to sell us on Mom. We all know the Star Wars universe. Yeah. It's part of our DNA. And we all know the Spider-Man origin story. Although, in theory, I agree with you that it might have made it a better movie if Peter wasn't quite so feckless. But I think yeah. the film would excuse that by saying he's very young. This is the youngest Spider-Man.
And I think it does go out of its way to make him wanting to do the right thing. Even when it's hard, he wants to do the right thing. He wants to go to this party, but he knows that he can't because he has to go be Spider-Man. It's spoiling something, but at a certain point, he can't be Spider-Man anymore. But he still knows that he has to still be Spider-Man, even if he doesn't have all the cool shit to be Spider-Man. So I don't think it makes him totally carefree. I just don't think it's – I like the Raimi films too, mm-hmm. And I think they strike a nice balance of kind of fun and emotional. But, I mean, coming off of Andrew Garfield, which is less like Spider-Man's a cocksucker and like
– emo cocksucker.
Just not interested in doing the right thing at all, and in fact it goes back on his word to the dying and was a piece of shit.
To like, be fair, it is Emma Stone.
I didn't mind this version of Spider-Man.
I think at the time the Raimi films came out, although I remember them being very, very popular, I don't think anyone ever gave him credit for how right he got certain things.
Well, again, you'll have a ton of people saying, like, no, he didn't. He got it all wrong.
And certainly subsequent comic book movies may have shown us how good those, at least the first two. I'm a big fan of the second one. It's incredible.
I will give Spider-Man Homecoming is not a bad movie by any way, shape, or form. But I will give it also some credit in that there's no superhero movie that really feels like it. It
yeah.
felt like they yeah. were trying something different. And
yeah.
I was glad that a lot of the things that I heard, and I think it was just because it's sort of on the nose in like one scene where he's running and then they have Ferris Bueller running and the
yeah,
TV
yeah,
and
yeah,
stuff.
Right.
I didn't think, like, even though it's high school and it's like, oh, it's John Hughes,
right.
I didn't feel like it was trying to be John Hughes.
Agreed.
Too much, yeah. which was nice. Yeah.
It feels like a superhero movie that's set in high school, but it's not like, let's make a high school movie that happens to have a superhero in it.
Yeah, it feels very, very high school.
Yeah. Dunkirk?
Mm-hmm.
Dunkirk. I don't think you and I have talked about Dunkirk.
No.
What did you think of Dunkirk?
If I remember correctly, you reviewed it, right?
I did.
And I very much agreed with the review because obviously it's Nolan, so everyone's going to regard it, a certain faction's going to regard it as the second coming of Christ. And I enjoyed it. I thought it was real good. I didn't think it was the second coming of Christ. I don't think it's his best movie. I thought it was good.
How would you rank his movie?
That's another one, right? Christopher Nolan
yeah,
movies.
Yeah.
It's only certain
that bait.
It's only certain things. I haven't had more people ask me about any other movie this summer. Family members who know that I like movies, or even tonight I saw some friends and I think they brought it up. And I always feel bad because I always have to say, you know, I didn't love it, but a lot of other people did, so don't take my word for it, because I don't want to discourage anyone from seeing it, but I also have to tell them, like, no, I wasn't crazy about it.
Was it fantastically successful?
I think it did well.
I mean, it wasn't like a phenomenon the way that some of his other movies have been, mostly Dark Knight and Inception, I think, have become huge cultural references, and this isn't going to be, but I think it did well.
Yeah, I liked it. I saw it a second time because the first time I saw it, the projection was super, was super, super dark. And I'm realizing that's just a problem with that theater. No, I mean, I think the problem with, I mean, and I think it's a good movie. I think it's like a 3.5-star movie. The thing is with Nolan is there's just this pretense of greatness all the time with him where if it's not perfect, then it seems disappointing. Yeah. And I think a lot of it is not, I mean, some of it is him too, because like every time a movie of his comes out, it's a big deal about formats and you watch in 70 or 35 or something like that. It can't just ever be like, this is the movie that comes out on Friday. Like he has to make it this big event and, you know, great that he's trying to, you know, like, you know, make the theatrical experience still special. But at the same time, it takes away from the power of his movie almost, I think, in the case of Dunkirk, because this is a true life event and it feels like an IMAX demo reel. So
did you feel the same way, though, about Hateful Eight with the whole 70mm thing?
Well, the Hateful Eight, I didn't, because I think there was certain aspects of the roadshow experience that were special to that movie. So like, I don't know. And I think I just like Tarantino more than Nolan, so I'm being biased in a sense too. But yeah, I mean, there is a certain amount of it where I just, when things are getting hyped because of exhibition, I get a little bit kind of, you know, shit-faced about it. It makes me annoyed. So I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I think that the stuff with it, so Dunkirk is split into these three segments with the air and then the beach and then the boat. And I thought the stuff with the boat was really moving. And like, I thought the stuff in the air was really exciting. And the stuff on the beach, I think purposely was less satisfying, but I think that's the most of the, like the biggest chunk of the movie. So that kept it from being maybe just a little bit better for me.
And again, I would argue that the boat stuff works as well as it does because of Mark Rylance and the fact that you have a good actor who gets a character to play, because so much of the movie is just weird cardboard cutouts by design where Nolan is like, I don't want to give anybody an actual individual identity. They're all representations of the faceless men who are on this beach. But it is at the it does a disservice to your movie to tell the story that way, I think.
And I've always prided myself on being reasonably intelligent, but I didn't get the time frame thing until I was driving home.
Really?
I was confused, like, when Cillian Murphy showed up on the boats later and stuff, like, how that fit in. I think that was...
Those, it's like, how could John Travolta be in this movie? He just got shot on the toilet.
Those titles... Well, I understood Pulp Fiction when I was watching it better than I did this. Those original titles...
Yeah.
3 weeks, 3 days, 3 hours.
Yeah.
I didn't get it. Okay. And then driving home, I was like, oh. Mm-hmm.
There's
because
like one
that's
moment.
That's where I started putting it together when we see him out of sequence being thrown off another boat. Because he basically just keeps getting thrown off.
There's one moment where they all kind of dovetail together that I was like, this is exciting. This is really interesting. And then the movie kind of doesn't do anything with that. I was like, ooh, neat. What cool story. It's just a gimmick. Okay, cool. does nothing for me.
I for a while, I was just kind of like, well, what is the message of this movie? Or is it just kind of like...
War is hell.
But I didn't think that was the point of the movie, really. The thing that I liked about it was it basically was just like had an opinion about heroism, which is just show up. Just do whatever you can, even if it's the smallest thing, the smallest thing helps. And I thought that was kind of it's a weird thing to say for a war movie. I thought it was kind of like a sweet message.
It's an interesting take in that it's like it's a bunch of small gestures, not one giant thing that saves the day.
Yeah. And the fighter pilot,
Tom Hardy,
had that thing over his mouth for
like
so much.
Bane.
I kept waiting for him to do the Bane voice. I really did. I kept waiting for him to do the Bane voice.
I see home. This is the Bane of my existence.
That's home. Isn't that interesting?
Have you seen Disney Pixar's Planes, Fire, and Rescue?
I have.
I am a plane.
I would place it pretty low on my ranking of the Pixar films.
I think at this point, I really start to fall off because I think now there's a bunch of movies that come out that I don't see.
Okay. And ironically, this is where JB retires right. and is literally going to the movies okay. every day.
So there's a bunch of stuff that you guys will have seen that I will have not, like War for the Planet of the Apes.
Is that next? You want to talk about that one?
Is that yeah. next? I honestly Let's don't know. I just know I didn't see
next.
It.
Yeah, that can be next. Go for
I would really like to hear what you thought or thought of it.
I loved it.
Why?
I don't know. I just like apes.
Have you ever seen Monkey Trouble? It's like...
you see that movie, Ed?
It's like he's a con man.
I have seen Monkey Trouble, and I agree with you that War of the Planet of the Apes is better than Monkey Trouble.
Okay.
You have made your point.
War of the Planet of the Apes, So Rise and Dawn, I've liked them exceedingly more as the series has progressed. I did not really like Rise that much.
And I'm the exact opposite.
Interesting. Okay.
You liked Rise the best?
Yeah, I did.
The James Franco one?
Yeah,
you,
I did.
But you love
Dawn is so good.
Because I remember the podcast you and Patrick did, and you guys were really high on Dawn.
But we didn't do a podcast on Dawn.
Yeah,
you sure did. We did.
Yeah.
The second
did
one?
Yeah.
Did we?
Yes. Yeah. It's very good.
I thought you were at like Mad Max Fury Road levels of enthusiasm on Dawn.
Dawn's really good. Rise is okay.
No, I like Rise, but I thought this one sort of...
I'm not sure I believe you.
Would you agree that Dawn is better than War?
I would agree that it's probably better, but I liked War more, if that makes sense.
Why?
I felt like War... There's no way of saying this without sounding so douchey, so fair warning. I felt like I was dreaming it. Like, it had this feel, this otherworldly tone to it, where it like, most movies kind of feel like you're being kind of put through, like, a vehicle taking you through a movie. And this one felt like... you were floating away on a magic bed and you don't know where this is going. And I thought.
And that's a good thing.
I enjoyed it. I mean,
to
like.
Be on a magical bed and not know where you're going.
Have you seen Little Nemo Adventures in Slumberland?
I remember the original Winsor McCay comic strips.
This is going to be on the cover of the DVD, right? Like a magical bed where you don't know.
Because being it's on like, a magical bed and not knowing where I'm going, that's a nightmare.
It's
that's
like
my
the
definition
longest
of a
quote
nightmare.
Blurb and it takes up 3/4 of the.
Right under. You'll go ape, Jeff Craig, 60-second preview. Yeah.
No, I liked it, and then it was weird. It was one of those movies where by the end of it, I was just like, when they put Caesar as this figurehead or this position of stature, and I just was like, this feels so earned. I really liked the movie.
I will admit that the ape special effects are now to the point where it's just it's crazy great. And I like the narrative. I like some of the action sequences. One of my biggest problems with the film is Woody Harrelson.
Okay.
Either his performance.
This will be a planet of apes.
Yeah, he was channeling his Larry Flint performance.
There's your can't
do the Larry Flint. Hey, ape, I bet you can't make 5 free throws in a row.
Let's
screw ape.
I don't know if it was performance or what he was given to do, but he was just this cardboard villain who existed to be the worst.
Well, he was, like Colonel Kurtz.
Yeah.
By proxy.
Really, really awful.
To use a Patrick term.
Also, I'm trying to remember.
Kurtz by proxy? That's
and this might be a spoiler.
Me.
Swoozy Kurtz by proxy.
This might be a spoiler. At the very end, there's a moment where... you're expecting one thing to happen and something else happens, and I thought it actually would have been better if what we were expecting would have happened.
Yeah.
Something with...
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Then I'm not engaging in spoilers. I'm not engaging in spoilers.
I liked Steve Zahn a lot in it. I thought that he was great as like a sort of comic relief type of ape.
But also it was really sad because he was the circus ape or the zoo ape?
Zoo.
Yeah. That whole... little subplot I liked a lot.
Yeah.
This and will be a planet of you apes.
Screwing is for carpenters.
There's another... is Valerian around this time, too?
Yeah. Yes.
You didn't see Valerian, right? I didn't either. I kind of wanted to. Like, I'm not a huge Luc Besson fan.
My wife really wanted to see it, and she was sad that we missed it.
I thought of, and I don't remember what the movie was, but I remember years ago talking about a movie with you and saying, I'm interested in seeing that. And you said, yeah, that's going to be the train or the caboose. And I was like, Valerian is going to be train or caboose.
Yeah, Valerian was interesting to watch for about 30 minutes because...
It's French caboose. It's like Le Caboose.
Yeah.
It's actually still playing at one theater around here.
And you don't have to go. I mean, but although I will say if you are going to see it ever, to see it in the theater is probably like the only way to watch it.
My lovely wife really
not
likes
on my
science
laptop.
Fiction. No. She really wanted to see it.
Yeah, Dane DeHaan. Big problem.
Yeah, I remember your review.
That guy is an albatross.
Your review is one of the reasons why I skipped it.
Yeah. Okay, what's your favorite letter of the alphabet if you had to pick one?
Oof. B.
B? Yeah. How about Brigsby Bear?
I didn't see Brigsby Bear, but you guys did, so
yeah,
go ahead.
I think we should briefly talk about Brigsby Bear. I got the feeling that
this is War of the Planet of the Apes all over again.
Well, no, because I don't remember what you thought of Brigsby Bear.
I liked it. I have some problems with it, but I think it's definitely worth watching.
Very definitely. And I'm a big fan of Kyle Mooney stuff on SNL, and it was like a movie version of the kind of thing he does frequently on SNL, especially mm-hmm. in terms of his character.
Were you weirded out that there was wall-to-wall comedians in the cast, but it was never going for jokes, and it made you like uncomfortable after a while?
Well, a lot of the movie is aiming to make you uncomfortable. A lot of Kyle Mooney's comedy is designed to make you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. It was strange, though, because like I just felt like there was a point being made of why... Just out of nowhere, Andy Samberg would show up playing a blind man, but then they're not making any jokes.
Well, there's that.
You want them to make jokes about blindness?
Yeah.
There's that trope that
I guess. I mean, I'm
all the
perfect.
SNL people have to put little cameos in their movie from yeah. other SNL people.
Yeah.
I give it a lot of credit for being ambitious. I give it a lot of credit for being unlike other movies we've seen this year. It certainly is very much what it is. I think it had a lot to say about a lot of different things, including grief, in terms of that he is taken from this life yeah. where he has grown very comfortable and yeah. he's thrust into a completely different situation. And everyone just expects him to be happy that he's been rescued, and no one is acknowledging that there's this thing that he has to work through. So
yeah.
again, I saw it as a metaphor for grief. And I thought Mark Hamill was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially as the film progresses, all the voices we realize he's actually been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's one of those rare Sundance movies that is kind of twee-ish, but not too twee.
Yeah. I always point to Little Miss Sunshine as being just...
Yeah, that movie's...
That just came up.
That it's not like good. You fed all these other indie twee things into a computer, and the computer spit out
Little
Miss
Sunshine. I feel about The Way, Way Back, but it turns out people love that movie.
They're wrong. The Way, Way Back is like, did you ever watch Beavis and Butthead?
Yeah.
You guys, you know like how the gym teacher takes them by the ankles and just starts like slamming them into the ground? That's how I feel when I watch almost every Fox Searchlight movie.
Yeah, that certainly became, but we agree that people should see Brigsby Bear.
Yes.
I want to.
Is very much worth your time.
Yeah.
Can we also talk about how Atomic Blonde is not very good?
Yeah. Yeah, you and I were talking about that a little bit, where it's like, it's like, look at these amazing action sequences,
yep.
and now we're so jaded by the amazing action sequence, we're like, now what do you got?
Because everything has the one-take fight scene. Even Hitman's Bodyguard did that shit, and... It's Charlize Theron is amazing
yeah.
doing the stunts and doing the fighting, and it's impressively put together. But at a certain point, it calls attention to itself as like, look, we're not cutting. And I thought the movie that surrounded the one memorable action scene was pretty lousy. I thought it was just what's great about John Wick, which again was the movie that this got compared to. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, look, here's this movie star doing her own stunts and in this badass action movie. What's great about John Wick is how simple it is.
Yeah.
He's a guy who wants revenge and then he goes to get revenge. And Atomic Blonde is fucking salt. Like it just gets so bogged down spy bullshit and none of it's interesting. None of it's compelling. I thought her character was not interesting to watch. It was a big disappointment for me.
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. I mean, like, I was definitely very kind of restless during large chunks of that movie.
Because it's pretty boring for a movie that should be badass.
And also, it's you know, I just, I'm going to be two-faced on something. Like earlier I said with Baby Driver how I liked movies with wall-to-wall soundtrack, and this one I was just like, are you kidding me? Like,
but don't you get it? It's in the 80s.
Yeah.
So here's a bunch of 80s needle drops.
Yeah. It's like they just left on, like, first wave on Sirius.
Basically, yeah. What's left?
Have either of you two seen Good Time?
No.
No.
It seemed like a bad time.
It's really good.
I know you said that, and I didn't get a chance to see it.
And that was the second Pattinson performance that is quickly making me forget about, like, Water for Elephants.
Is the other one The Rover?
No, the other one is Lost City of Z.
Oh, that. Yeah, that's right.
Where for the first 20 minutes, I didn't even realize it was Pattinson. Two brothers directed Good Time. It's kind of amazing in a lot of ways. It's really, really good. It's really, really worth your time. There's a twist that I won't give away halfway through that I've never seen in another film like this. It's very, very much worth your time.
I want to check it out.
Yeah. And you did see Wind River.
I did.
Which I liked, although I have since read a review that kind of accurately points out it was directed by the guy who wrote Hell or High Water.
Yeah, and Sicario.
And I think all three of the films are of a certain type. The review that I read said the film is a little bit too on the nose about the predator and prey metaphor, that it kind of beats you over the head with it.
Okay.
And I don't think this is a spoiler because it's been getting all this attention on social media. The film ends with what could be a very touching scene between two very damaged characters.
Mm.
And then words appear on the screen that are so tone deaf to the film that came before.
Yeah.
It's like you change channels and now you're watching a Lifetime Channel movie.
I had a reaction to what you're talking about. Not the same one though. I didn't think it felt like a Lifetime movie. I just felt like it came out of left field.
Exactly. And was tone deaf to the rest of the film because I got home and I'm talking about this with my lovely wife who is smarter than I am. And she said, you know, the two titles I'm talking about at the end.
Yeah.
That's how the film should have begun.
Yeah. I mean, it would have given you context for what the rest of the movie. I had an interesting conversation with your son when I was out in California earlier in the summer. And I was asking him just from a screenwriting perspective, like, what do you start with? Do you have a story in mind? Is it a character you want to write about? And then, like, you build a story around that character? Or do you have, like, a message that you want to tell? And he was saying, obviously, like, it could be any one of those things. But, like, they tell you at AFI, like, not to write to a message. Because if you're doing that, whatever subtext you're going to have is just going to become text. And it's going to be like you're beating the audience over the head. And then the audience is going to resent you because they're going to be two steps ahead of you the whole time. And I thought that Wind River was the first movie I can remember where it's like Taylor Sheridan had a subtext that he wanted to tell with the movie. And then it's like he watched his movie and he's like, none of that came out, but I need to, this is what the movie's about. I need to let people know that this is what the movie you just watched was about.
Even if it were to fade to black.
Yeah.
And then we would have that. Yeah. It wouldn't be as bad. But again, I go with my wife saying those two screeds on the screen need to be at the beginning. And then it's like you said, there's some context. Would you recommend Wind River?
100%.
Me too.
I don't think it's as good as Hell or High Water or Sicario, but it doesn't need to be. And I think that for it's a really impressive directorial debut. And I think that it's a really good thriller and drama, and it's a reminder that Jeremy Renner, even though it's fun to tease him because of, like, even for reasons that he doesn't even deserve, like, but like
his dumb face,
yeah, it's like just because he's Hawkeye or something like that, like every once in a while you're reminded what a really good actor he is. Yeah. And Wind River is one of those
and
movies.
I actually gave Wind River credit because the trailer makes you expect one thing.
I've not even seen a trailer
and
for this movie.
The movie is not that thing.
Okay.
The
so
trailer,
it's not about a wind river?
The trailer really expects a lot of don't question the Native American way and you're not one of us and you're not in your element.
So it's
and that's
Thunderheart?
That's not what the movie is at all.
Did you have a white savior issue with the movie? Because I read a review where somebody was saying, it's really good, But can we cut it out with, like, the white person helping out in any way with what should be just a Native American story? And I feel like that argument is so self-serving that, like, it doesn't like, in this case, yeah, okay, he's white. Move on.
Well, it almost seems like the film itself is addressing that by giving him a Native American wife.
Yeah.
And suggesting he is a part of the culture.
Yeah.
But could I just say that based on what we know of the human stain, couldn't he secretly be black?
Yes.
All right, then what's the problem?
I also think, and this agrees with what
Rank
you're saying,
the Wentworth Miller movies,
that much more than race, much like Hell or High Water, and this I remember was something that Patrick and I both really liked about Hell or High Water, he's very much in the same realm as the Native Americans, because one of the points the film is making is these people are very poor.
Yeah.
I mean, there's that thing at the beginning about whether he's going to be able to pay child support and all that stuff. And I appreciate it when films actually talk about reality. Did both of you see Logan Lucky?
Yes.
No.
Okay. Just
like
briefly.
I said, I saw nothing.
Did you enjoy Logan Lucky?
I enjoyed it enough, but I don't think it's any better than, like, Ocean's 13.
So I went to see it, and I had big expectations because of Steven Soderbergh, and it kind of fell flat for me.
Yeah.
And I was trying to figure out, is it the script? Is it the performances? It's like a souffle that didn't come out right.
Yeah.
And I was trying to figure out why I didn't like it more.
I think it just doesn't have a lot of reason to exist other than Steven Soderbergh wanted to make another movie, and he had a lot of friends who wanted to be in his movie.
Yeah, it's chock-a-block full of...
Yeah, it's definitely, like...
jarring cameos.
Yeah, and it didn't feel like anybody, except for maybe Daniel Craig, thought about who their person they were playing was, except for, here's the voice I want to do.
Well, and I also felt that the Daniel Craig performance, which is getting a lot of attention, was a lot more fun for Daniel Craig to play
okay.
than it was for me to watch and enjoy. It's like, he seems to be having a good time.
He was
me,
when,
not
well,
so much.
Somebody okay. should.
Yeah, he was when I was the most alert because it kept me away from whatever the fuck Hilary Swank was doing. And then, like, Seth MacFarlane's, like what was that?
In Seth MacFarlane's
It's like he's playing the Garibaldi's man.
And I'm not... he's got a bunch of nonsense on his face. And I'm not a Seth MacFarlane apologist. I know people who went to see the movie and didn't realize that was him.
Yeah.
So that's something. Here's what I thought. In the first Ocean's 11 movie, we are in on the scam.
Yeah.
We know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And
to
then,
a point.
Right. Because then Soderbergh
Correct.
Upends it.
Correct.
And it's clever because, oh, much like the people being taken, I thought this
exactly.
and then this other thing happened. And I thought Logan Lucky went askew in that he is presenting the heist from the beginning as we have no idea what the plan is.
Yeah.
So at the end, when it turns out that something different happened, okay, I didn't know
right,
what it
okay.
was. So what was the
right, right,
purpose
right.
of that? I thought it was bad storytelling.
Yeah, you know your movie isn't great when... For me, the most exciting bit of the movie was when I was like, wow, they're putting the money in a bottle and then sucking it up in a tube. Like, look at that tube. Like, that was my favorite part, was all the tube work.
And
it's
as usual,
DVD box. Yeah. Look at that tube.
Adam Driver is in a different movie than everybody else.
And yet never. No, he is in a car at one part. There is a joke that failed.
So, would you agree with what I'm saying, though?
He's in a different movie?
That he's a very different actor with a very different style than anyone else in
Well, I was joking with Patrick because I talked about it on the Fugitive show that Adam Driver, it was like, it's like, really? That's not a voice you're doing as a party at a party as a joke? That's what you're going with. Okay, sure.
We talked about Girls Trip on the 400th show, but I know, Adam, you just saw Girls Trip today.
Yeah, I walked out of it the first time, and
right.
then I walked back in.
As the biggest
stayed.
Malcolm D. Lee fan at F This Movie, do you want to weigh in on Girls Trip briefly?
Yeah,
it's like one of the big breakouts of the summer.
Yeah,
over $100 million.
And it makes total sense why it was a breakout, because Universal is smart and serves underserved audiences.
Yep.
And they've been doing that for a few summers.
Yep. It's the car wash of 2017.
And
I was thinking the DC cab.
I
shows our different generation.
Yeah. The part that I walked out on and girls tripped the first time.
The fire hose being?
No, I
no,
didn't stay for
way
that.
Before that.
I didn't stay for that. I walked the out the first time with them. The guy flashing them with his homeless peeker. His little
see,
hobo
that's, but
penis.
See, that's where you got it wrong, because his penis has a home. The rest of him doesn't.
Oh, okay.
The penis's home is in the pants.
Yeah.
The penis's home is in the pants.
Yeah. At least he was circumcised. Menace.
This is us trying
what?
To tell you to send your penis home. Yeah. Adam, put some pants on, please.
Never.
What did you think of Girls Trip?
I thought that the first half hour is really bad. The last half hour is really bad, because that's mostly like
when they're
story
trying to tie
stuff.
Up. Yeah.
But I thought in the middle, when they just kind of let them party and they go to concerts with a lot of artists that
yeah,
I like.
Yeah, right.
And
Lorenz Tate shows up, hasn't aged a day.
Just being cool and being fun on-screen company. I was fine with it.
I thought the scene where they wore the wigs and fought the other girls was pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, it was funny because
DVD box. The scene where they wear wigs and fight the other girl.
I thought it was so weird. It was like they were deliberately punishing me for walking out, because like right after I walked out.
This is why you don't walk out of movies.
I know. Right when after I walked out, that's like when they brought on all the stuff I like, where they're Adam's gone. Where's New Edition?
Everyone, put on your White Sox jerseys.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah.
But again, I didn't love the movie, but I watched it just thinking the whole time, like, well, this wasn't made for me, so who cares if I don't like it? But to its credit, I recognize that all the stuff at the end, like you said, where they're trying to make this outrageous comedy and then it has to be about these serious issues and these friends who had a falling out, like, at least there's a dramatic structure to it.
Yeah.
And again, I look at something like Baywatch that doesn't even understand that. I'm not saying the drama is good, but at least it understands structure in a way that a fucking movie like Baywatch does not.
I'm trying to imagine
Best Malcolm D. Lee movie is The Best Man's Holiday.
I still haven't seen that one. I saw the first Best Man.
Beautiful movie.
Yeah, I need to see it.
And by the way, meme mark on Mike Pomero and Adam Thass, we started our own Flossy Posse.
Oh, okay, cool.
And it's about the White Sox.
Okay.
And it's called Soxy Pitches.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
And I want to start my own group called Fluffy Pussy, and we take in orphan cats. What were you thinking it was going to be? we take in orphan cats, and
I thought it was a grapefruit.
We pet them and make them feel welcome. My wife had the greatest reaction to that grapefruit thing in Girls Trip. When the joke is finally pulled, she turned to me, the realist, and said, well, didn't they realize that the grapefruit is acid? And
it was weird. Yeah, I did think when they were doing the demonstration of what the grapefruiting was, I did sit there and think, this isn't funny, but man, are they going for this joke.
I felt sorry for the actress. Because it seemed, okay, now we need you to do this.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to do that. Here's the check you're getting. off camera, they actually had to show the check while she was doing that.
Wah, wah.
Very quickly, before we wrap up.
Yes.
Two smaller films, which I really, really liked. I know Adam didn't like one of them as much as I did, but The Little Hours is very much worth people's time.
You talked about that on 400 also.
It's a tiny film that deserves to be seen.
Yeah.
It made me laugh a lot. And I might be alone in this, but Everything It Comes at Night wasn't, I thought, a ghost story was.
Damn it. I didn't see a ghost story either.
It's slow. It can test your patience. But like Brigsby Bear, I thought it was about a lot of things and not just grief. And I was transfixed by it, and I love it. I think it's a masterpiece.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. I didn't like Little Hours. And the ghost story I have some respect for, but I didn't like it. I think that it's, I don't know.
A tedious, pretentious fest?
I don't want to say
the
those
trailers
words.
Were.
I don't want to say those words. I will say this though: you have to be a really, really, really good director to get away with what they're trying in that movie. And I don't think David Lowery is quite there.
I recognize that it takes its time
because when you have a man in a bedsheet standing watching Rooney Mara eat a pie for 5 minutes, or a man in a bedsheet sitting next to Rooney Mara packing up boxes, or a man in a bedsheet talking to another man in a bedsheet with subtitles. It's begging for you to laugh at it.
You're describing everything that I love. Rooney Mara got a lot of shit on social media about the pie eating scene. And my wife, who is something of a baker, suggested that all of that stuff on social media missed the point. I don't think this is spoilers for a ghost story.
The pie is a metaphor?
No, the
for
reason
eternity.
The reason oh. that she's eating it that way is that it's a really bad pie. That neighbor friend doesn't know what she's doing. It's an awful pie. She has come by with a pie that's not good or well made.
Worse pie, the pie she's eating, or Darren Aronofsky's pie.
I'm not a fan of Darren Aronofsky. That's and why I recently saw the trailer for Mother with an exclamation point. Yeah. Oh my God.
We'll see.
More nonsense, this time with Javier Bardem.
We will see. One other small movie I want to mention is Ingrid Goes West.
Yeah.
Which I liked a lot.
I loved it.
Yeah. I have some issues with maybe the ending, but I thought it's really smart about a lot of stuff that's going on now, in particular with social media and the way that we live our lives. I thought Aubrey Plaza, I mean, I thought everybody in it was really great. I think the standout is Ice Cube Jr., who is so ingratiating.
Amazing
yeah,
in that
he's
movie.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Just so likable. And
it's just kind of such a welcome thing that he can play somebody other than Ice Cube.
Correct.
Because you didn't know that.
Exactly.
Because you haven't seen him.
You assumed he was cast because he was his kid. And then and now you see, oh no, he's a good actor who is incredibly likable.
All the Batman stuff was funny. It was
really funny. I mean, it gets so much stuff so right, and you've seen this stuff. People try to comment on it before in a way that's so easy or wrong, and this movie gets a lot of it right.
Yeah.
And I'll mention The Hitman's Bodyguard only because I saw it. Mm-hmm. And as you said, it's a movie that should have come out in 2000. I don't think it's the worst movie of the year.
Yeah.
It's just like not anything. It's like
I have a piece of cardboard at home. That will let me into any screening of Hitman's Bodyguard for free.
Wow. I mean, that might not be worth it, but
it's not. You're a good person, and you shouldn't waste your time on it.
I have a lot of free time.
I think
this Ingrid Goes West conversation, though, makes me really happy because I'm going to see that on Monday.
Yeah, you should definitely see it. Hitman's Bodyguard, I think Samuel Jackson is trying. Mm-hmm. I think Ryan Reynolds is given nothing to do. I was surprised at how much more it leans into being an action movie than a comedy.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be a comedy.
Yeah.
But again, Midnight Run exists. Watch Midnight Run. If you have to try to redo Midnight Run, do that.
On a totally different note, the new Capital One commercials where Samuel Jackson sings,
yes.
Is the joke that he's not very good?
He sings over the end credits of The Hitman's Bodyguard. He has recorded a song that he sings.
Or is the singing in the Capital One commercial good?
I don't think I've seen that commercial.
I don't know. I thought that he was like in a band at some point in his life, maybe before he was an actor.
I don't think
he
the
sings
song...
that famous Reverend Al Green song.
Let's Stay Together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is I don't
him
I'm
singing
musical.
Over the end credits seemed fine.
No. Those of you listening to this who have made it to the end of the podcast,
right away when that ended.
Put in the comment section whether Samuel Jackson.
We have a lot of musical
good,
listeners,
or I don't get it. Chaby,
help us
I
out.
Value your opinion. Is the joke that it's not good, or that he's good, and I just don't get it?
Rapid fire. What else do we want to talk about?
Very quickly,
yes,
because I'm old and I go to other screenings.
Yes,
with, senior citizens. It's a sea of whiteheads,
right?
And my bald head, courtesy of TCM and Fathom Events. And some other reissue programs. This summer, I was able to see, in an honest-to-God movie theater, Smokey and the Bandit, Some Like It Hot, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Sleeping Beauty, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Unforgiven, The Lion King, It Happened One Night, Terminator 2, Charlie Varick, The Taking of Pelham 123, and Close Encounters. That, gentlemen, is a great summer.
That is a good summer.
Rapid fire.
Yeah.
Okja, it's okay.
Okay.
The House, horrible. Wish Upon, magical.
Best bad movie of the summer.
You went to see The House?
I went to Bruin View. So it was me and my friend, and we were the only two people in a concert hall watching The House.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah.
I don't know of any other person who went to see that movie.
Rob Hubel's in it.
There you go.
That's all I got to say.
There it is.
Menashe saw that today.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's good. Whatever. Okay. It reminded me of, like, a Hasidic Jewish The Wrestler.
You had me at Hasidic.
Yes. Thank you.
Tell the joke that you told me in the car.
Oh, I told you a variation of this. I said that when I saw Menashe, it was me and two other women, so it was a Menashe toi. But no, that movie's, I mean, like, if you want to see a stressful scene where boxes of gefilte fish fall out of a van, go see Ingrid Goes Wet. No, go see Menashe.
Guess what? I don't need to see that. I live it.
Yeah.
Gefilte fish coming out of a van, yeah. Cars 3.
The Dark Tower Rank is it. The worst. It's like almost The Mummy bad.
Yeah, I read a lot about that.
Detroit is very good with two really good performances in it with...
you guys talked about it on 400, though, so that's good.
Yeah.
JB's shaking his head because he forgot to write it down.
Yeah. Is it on the list?
Annabelle Creation. I'm tired of this whole faux 50s, faux 70s classy horror.
Yeah.
In its defense, I don't see a lot of contemporary horror films. I pretty much stay away from a lot of new horror films. I went to see Annabelle Creation, and I felt like I got my money's worth, and I liked the jump scares. I enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The Trip to Spain is good. All Saints, I saw because of my boy John Corbett, and it's better than I expected it to be, and it's not like your typical faith-based movie. It's
okay.
A very nice movie about why you should be nice to refugees.
Oh,
and every time I log into Flixster, yeah. There's a pop-up ad for that movie that comes up.
Yeah. And the last one.
That's just John Corbett Skyping you.
They've targeted the Flixster crowd.
Yeah. And The Birth of the Dragon, the best movie of the summer. It's a perfect movie.
What is the movie? But I do feel like between the handful of big movies that we saw that we liked, even if we didn't love them, and a number of smaller movies that we mentioned – I mean, I honestly feel like looking back on the summer, so little of it is memorable, and I'm like, it couldn't have been a good summer. But I don't know. We talked about a lot of stuff that was decent to good.
Yeah. I saw 42 movies.
Okay.
Because I'm lonely.
I probably saw like four.
I like 25 of them enough to say, yeah, it was fine.
Okay. Nice. What's the movie that I saw that's worse than Baywatch?
The Mummy.
I don't know if that's worse than Baywatch. But I do feel like
you did see The Mummy.
I did see The Mummy.
I'm just.
But I do feel like they're bad in similar ways, which is interesting.
King Arthur is worse than Baywatch.
I think all three belong in the time capsule.
Dark Tower is probably just as bad as Baywatch. Okay.
I have dog shit in this hand.
Yes, well, exactly.
And cow shit in this hand.
Here's the good news about us finishing this summer podcast. One, I love recording it. Thank you, gentlemen. Two, we're only a month away from Scary Movie Month.
Yeah.
How exciting is that?
That's very
And I haven't
exciting.
Even thought of what our commentary is going to be. I only have a month to figure it out. I literally have zero idea.
Do you have any options?
Nope. Not a one. Okay. We'll figure it out.
Okay.
Thank you guys for listening as always. You can find our website at fthismovie.com. We're on Twitter at fthismovie. We're on Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff. Or you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. We will be back next week with a podcast on It.
Nice.
Featuring the return of Stephen King expert, Mr. Joe Madry. So I'm very excited for that.
You'll float too.
If you are, if you're trying to find King Arthur, Warner Archive is now sold out of King Arthur.
It was a limited edition in a steel book.
Limited edition.
Charlie, came with boxing gloves.
Charlie Hunnam hand delivered all three copies that they made.
He will literally fight you.
Mm-hmm.
I love you, Toby Hooper. Bye, guys.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.